Let's get ready to rumble!
Hello, and welcome to episode 83 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and more make one hell of a big noise. It's a special crossover event, and the first ever Awesome Pop Culture Rumble, which I've been harping about on social media all week. I'm Vince Hunt, audio punching bag, and creator of the comic series The Red Mask from Mars, and allow me to introduce my fellow gladiators of all things comics this week. First up, is comic artist, writer, smooth-talking vigilante, and creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Next is writer, Down the Tubes contributor, and someone who normally fights only with his urge to wear head-to-toe velvet, Mr. Tony Esmond.
I do like gladiator movies, don't you?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Prison gladiator films are the best.
Yeah. Porno versions.
It's... What? It's already going into that place week, folks, so strap in, because it's going to be a good one. And joining us in the octagon of awesome is the host of the Pop Culture Parlor podcast, and also a Ninja Turtle fan extraordinaire, Stacey Taylor.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Stacey, you right?
Hello.
Yeah, I just did a really sing-songy Mary Poppins-esque style hello and realised that's... Well, I was thinking that's not representative of who I am as a podcaster. I should have been like, fuck off, you. It's like immediately.
You'd be right at home then, you see.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, hello, hi, yes, I'm good. I feel a bit delicate, I'm quite hungover. And also I'm a bit jealous of my husband, who's downstairs prepping for another all-nighter to watch the Royal Rumble, but I forgot to book time off work, so I'm going to have to go to bed and not have wrestling fun.
And what time does that kick off? This is like 2 in the morning.
Yeah, late. I don't know. Stupid o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's absolutely no way that I can call in sick, because then I'd probably lose my job.
Painfully obvious.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I feel really sick, guys. Really sick. And I'm like, oh, that's funny. I seem to remember a picture of you on Facebook, you know, doing a wrestling move in your living room at 5 o'clock this morning.
Hitting your husband with a chair. Yeah.
We've all done that. Well, you don't have to worry. No one's going to find out by listening to this show. So don't worry about that.
Whether you did or did not call in sick.
Yeah.
You're not the sort of person I think would call in sick. I've only known you for about 5 minutes, but I think I can say that.
And I actually always feel terribly guilty when I call in sick, even if I am sick. I have to be really sick for me to... What I'll normally do is I'll crawl into work and then get sent home because I look like I'm about to die. But that makes me feel better, because then at least everybody's witnessed the fact that, look how sick I am. I've proved it to everyone, so
like
I can feasibly... But I can feasibly go home and die, and it's fine.
Don't sit next to her on the bus.
There you go. That's the motto for this week, already sorted.
Yeah.
It's going to be a bit of a fun week this week. We've already had a little bit of a funny chat before we all gone, but the Awesome Comics podcast rarely talks about movies. As you know, we're all about the small press and blah, 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 blah. I could tell you that every week, but what's the point? This week, we've decided to change it up a bit, haven't we?
Yep.
We rarely talk about movies and TV shows in depth, apart from, I watched this and it was great. Move on. But it's a show this week. Oh, I don't know. What's the best way to put it? We've decided to focus on the stuff, no doubt, we all like out there. Love, hate, or rant about on social media. And that's comics in other mediums, which is movies, TV shows, and more. Oh my, what show we've got lined up. Now, warning up front, this could potentially be a slightly spoiler-filled show. We're going to endeavour not to go too much into that territory, because that annoys me, but if we talk about something you haven't seen yet, just be warned. Because you know what it's like, you get enthusiastic about a show and just sort of say, God, do you remember when it turned out that they're all ghosts? Or everyone's a robot, you know.
It happens to me often.
So, with that in mind, who better to join us than the host of the Pop Culture Parlor?
Yeah, you say that, but I always have to play a game with my guests of guess whether or not Stacey's seen this thing, because normally I haven't. I'm terrible at pop culture.
So your show, which is called The Pop Culture Parlour,
you're
terrible at pop culture.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that I didn't really discover that there were good movies and TV shows and things until I met my then-boyfriend, now-husband, in 2005. And there's a lot of catching up to do because there's a lot of TV and movies that existed before then.
Indeed.
Depends where you
are. Yeah. It's a bit like my football podcast called On the Balls, which is, I'm the same, I'm sort of catching up with a lot of sort of
is
football
that about
stuff.
Football?
Yeah.
Cool, blimey.
Oh, well, not often.
Oh dear, as you can tell, folks, this is going to go, who knows where it's going to go this week. But this is how this week is going to work. We have four initial categories to discuss. Anyone who's been following our Facebook or Twitter or whatever will see me sort of rant about it all week. In each of those categories, each one of us has chosen something we want to talk about and that we love. We didn't want to put the whole favourites on it because it's so hard to narrow down your favourite movie and stuff, and you know, so we just wanted to pick something that we loved. Who knows? Maybe we'll all agree. Maybe we won't. It's going to be interesting.
And we love them all, don't we? Oh, we love them all anyway, don't we?
Well, the one category is about bad stuff.
Yeah, but I like to think of that as the film that I like the least. I'm saying I like the least. Not that, you know, and I'm not going to go
smash the sound right up. The one that I chose, I straight up hate. So.
Do you?
Yeah,
no.
Like, it's bad.
Yeah. That round's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
It's also the one that was one of the closest rounds for a vote. So, yeah.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. All our picks went to a little listener vote. So once we've all said our piece, and probably talked about how much we like these things, I shall announce who came out on top in each category. Just a bit of extra fun. Blood may be spilled and harsh words spoken, but one thing is certain, it's going to be entertainment.
I thought you were going for a rhyme there. I thought that was going to rhyme.
No. Yeah. In my script, I've got a big build-up to a Russell Crowe, are you entertained, like, scream. But
it seemed good when you wrote it down type thing. Is that the sort of thing you're saying?
Yeah. Essentially.
So let's do a show in rap today. That'd be good, because you know I'm a big fan of rap.
You love rap, don't you? You're a big hip-hop fan, aren't you? Are you telling me?
Or New Jersey.
What's your favourite hip-hop album?
I don't know any.
Dre 2001. It's gonna be the best.
Don't know. I don't listen to music from after 1978, do I? So I don't
know.
It is.
It's Big Willie Style. That's your favourite.
Who's Big What?
Big Willie Style.
Will Smith CD.
Yeah, there you go.
He's good, isn't he, Will Smith? Wiki Wiki Wild Wild West. That's my favourite film ever.
There you go. And what better time to start with our first round?
Round one.
Movies based on a comic book property.
Okay, so who wants to go first on a movie based on comics?
Shall I go first on the first round, and then we can swap it over, because I hate going first all the time.
Yes. We'll mix it up.
Okay.
It's that kind of shit.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. So what is your pick, Tony?
Best is his movie, isn't it? So my favourite movie of all time is Superman 2.
Of all time?
Pretty much, yeah. Well, no... Any movie, I'd say it's probably up there in the top five. But superhero movie, Superman 2, definitely.
Right.
Probably due to the age I was when it came out, I'll admit that. So I was about 12, I think, when it came out. And that's one of those sort of formative years, isn't it? When you sort of fall in love with stuff that you know, you'll carry on through. It came out in 81, April 81. It was filmed almost simultaneously, certainly parts of it, with Superman the movie. Now, has everyone seen Superman 2?
Yeah. Yes.
Many times.
But- a long time ago, so I don't really remember it.
Okay. Well, also, that's good. To me, it's the movie, and I'm sure we'll get onto this in a minute, maybe, Stace, is the movie that got Superman right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Christopher Reeve was to me at the time the best possible actor for the role. You know, he looks like he can give you a punch, but he also looks sort of like genuinely like a nice guy, and also he looks like a sort of intelligent and moral guy as well, if that makes sense. he was, and I'll tell you what he was best at. For me, he was also the best at playing Clark Kent. Yeah. I don't think anyone's better than with the sort of klutzy sort of Clark Kent side of things.
Yeah.
So even if you ignore the Superman character in that. Look at the villains you got. So you got Terrence Stamp as Zod. I mean, who's played him better than that? Nobody. He's, you know, Kneel Before Zod, classic line, all that sort of thing. He's been on T-shirts and still remains on T-shirts. You got Sarah Douglas as Ursa, who is just brilliant. I love Sarah Douglas. She's just sort of enthusiastic. You follow her on Twitter, she's full of enthusiasm. Jack O'Halloran as Non, who about 2 years ago picked me up once at a convention and thought it was hilarious.
Which ain't anything. It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah. What, and then I made him give me a piggyback to the coffee stand. It's good. And Gene Hackman, and this is straight off stuff like The French Connection for Gene Hackman. You know, it wasn't that long after all that stuff. Yeah. You know, he's proper top actor, top of his game.
Yeah.
Everyone in it like brings their A game. It's charming. It doesn't suffer from this sort of snarky, sarcastic, knowing wink at the camera. It's a charming film. You know.
Mm.
And because I was so young, I suppose I genuinely feared that Superman might not win. And that's a strange thing to say that now. You know, we all know that the X-Men are going to come out on top, or Captain America eventually is going to be all right, you know, and this sort of thing. But the time when Superman's getting, you know, kicked around New York, which I think was Pinewood Studios, or Metropolis rather, you know, by three villains, and I think he might not win this, you know?
But even before then, like, you got the bit where he loses his powers, gets fucked up by that bully.
Oh, God.
And then has to trek back to the Fortress of Solitude, and it's hard.
Like, yeah.
Well, I remember watching the kid thinking, fucking hell. I didn't think, fucking hell. Oh,
yeah, I was about to say, you started
And when he, you know, gives up his powers, you know, and he reveals himself to Lois, I guarantee that will break your heart. That's just an incredible moment as well, you know?
Yeah.
And then he uses the super kiss, which everyone went, super kiss, what's that about? But it actually was in canon at the time. It was in Action Comics 306. There you go, for the geeks amongst us.
Really?
So actually was a genuine superpower that he had. So it wasn't just a sort of MacGuffin that was used in the movie.
So he could kiss women and they'd forget things.
You couldn't get away with that these days.
No,
I'm not going to kiss. That forgot me, but there you go, sort of fine. Sometimes it helps.
You know, like stuff when he takes the symbol off? I'm fine with all of that in the film. It doesn't bother me that it's not necessarily canon. It's just because it's the film.
Agreed, because it was in the tone of Superman, wasn't it? Mm. You know, it wasn't sort of shot like really dark, so you can barely see what's going on. You know, it's this sort of bright. You know, it's this. He, you know, you can tell that he genuinely cares for people from Earth. You know, it's got that real sort of thing to it. Couple into the fact that it was written by Mario Puzo, or part written by Mario Puzo, who also wrote The Godfather. And if I won't get into the sort of the weeds of this now, but if you read any sort of history of this, and you can find extracts from the original script. Mario Puzo clearly wasn't the most sane man on the planet. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
There was actually a scene where he wanted Superman to be flying over the top of Telly Savalas, see him land. Telly Savalas was going to say to him, "Who loves you, baby?" And then Superman was going to fly off. That was genuinely in the shooting script at one point.
Fucking hell!
Kojak was going to be in it.
Yeah, Kojak was going to be in it. Yeah, I think Mario Puzo thought, I quite like Kojak. He's quite good. You'll probably find the Mario Puzo and Telly Savalas. I think Telly Savalas was quite a partier. Probably knew each other from somewhere or other and sort of talked each other into doing this. You know, it was directed. There was a bit of a sort of drama around the direction of it, because part of it was directed by Richard Donner, who was uncredited because it sort of was filmed sequentially the same time as the movie, and Richard Lester came in and took over, and there's a little bit of a history of that I won't go into, but you can look into it. Now, interestingly, it's something that Simon Russell brought up on the Twitter. He was saying, what is comic-y about comic movies? And I'll make him right on most movies around that. You know, it's just a movie translation, isn't it?
Yeah.
What is the actual function, you know, what is the sort of functionality of a comic in a movie? And there's
and I think, to be honest, you do have to step away from the original material if you're gonna, you can't be too beholden, because they are different beasts, aren't they?
Yeah
I think you're right, but what Richard Lester certainly did, and he's on record as saying this, the original movie was much more widescreen. If you look at the two of them, they're parts of them are chalk and cheese. I think he quotes Lawrence of Arabia. He says Superman the movie is more Lawrence of Arabia, where you get lots of sort of establishing and long shots and stuff like that. But he purposely framed a lot of the shots as if it was a comic. That makes sense.
Okay.
It's much more closer up, much more sort of street level, stuff, which is really interesting, and I think that's probably one of the reasons I prefer it to the movie, actually, although I do love the movie as well. There's a couple of other little interesting things. Henry Fonda was almost the president, which I think was quite cool.
There's a great moment with the president and Zod.
Right.
And kind of Zod's cracked them, and the president goes down on one knee, and he sort of mumbles to himself, "Oh, God." And Zod corrects him, saying, "Zod."
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Brilliant.
That's the point where, isn't that the point where Lex Luthor asks for Australia? He says he wanted to own Australia, I think.
Mm.
Yeah. And yeah. They're calling it, all throughout it, they call it Planet Houston, don't they?
Mm.
Yeah.
Which I kind of like.
The only thing about Superman, I mean, I love Gene Hackman, but I wasn't always really a fan of his Lex Luthor.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it was a different
Lex. It was a
little
Lex. Bit comic, wasn't he? A little bit comedic.
Mainly because it's
certainly
more comedic.
Wasn't like the Lex Luthor at the time. Yeah. Which I think was kind of like the Lex Luthor who was in Superman versus Spider-Man and all these sort of things, you know.
Yeah.
Who was that sort of bald-headed scientist with a bit of a super suit occasionally, you know.
Yeah.
But to me, I watched it about yearly, this, and this is how much of a weird kid I was, because it was pre-video, you know, we didn't really have video recorders when I was a kid. We had I taped it on an audio tape, and I've still got that audio tape somewhere here, and I would listen to it back on my... my tape recorder in my bedroom of the, you know, the taping it by just holding the tape recorder in front of the television, you know. So that's how much I loved it at the time. And I don't care that it hasn't got CGI. I mean, the big thing, you'll believe a man can fly, and as a 12-year-old, fuck me, I did. You know, it's incredible. You know, you don't need the... Margot Kidder, okay, you could see that she was on the edge of insanity even during Superman 2.
Yeah.
Superman 3, certainly, you know. There was that period where she went and lived in a bush outside someone's house, wasn't there? I think she sort
of...
Yeah,
she fucking really... Went for it.
Yeah.
I found out Superman 4 had the same shooting budget as Alien.
Oh,
can you
believe
that?
Yeah.
And look at the contrast of the two films. It's just...
Yeah. I will make anyone right who says that Superman 1, 2 and 4 are Superman movies, but Superman 3 is not. To me, Superman 3 is a Richard Pryor movie.
Yeah.
I mean, but for me... Like, at the time when I was watching it on TV, I saw Superman 3 more on TV growing up than I did 2. And I think 2 is the best one. But I think 3 was the first time I was kind of introduced to the Superman movies.
Okay, yeah.
They were trying to...
Billy Connolly's wife, didn't she? She was a sort of sexy siren in that. I forget her name now. She was on the dancing program the other day. I can't remember her name now, but yeah. So it was a sort of weird. It was a weird episode, wasn't it? That sort of almost ended it until Canon Films brought back 4, didn't they? Which was just the history of the Superman movies is really interesting if you ever get to read anything about it. But Superman 4 is just a crazy film.
They kind of ran out of money and had to cut large bits of it, and it's a strange one.
Yeah. And it's just Superman, Christopher Reeve wrote the speech about no more nuclear weapons, and it was kind of the reason he came back and did the role, because they said, oh, you can write this. And yeah, it's in the Canon Films documentary, isn't it? It's quite interesting. Mm.
Yeah.
Because then at the time they tried to put Eddie Murphy into Star Trek. You know, the one where they go back in time?
Oh, okay.
Through the whales. Initially, Eddie Murphy was going to be in that.
Because
they were doing the whole thing with crossing over stuff. Yeah. So like when Richard Pryor popped up in Superman 3, they were kind of like trying to put their best kind of things together to maximise it.
Because I like Richard Pryor, I really like him as a stand-up, and a lot of his movies are good. But I don't know, it just doesn't seem to work too well for me. It just seems to be after these two sort of, it's a real sort of legendary story, 1 and 2, aren't they? They've got this real sort of thing to them, and then suddenly you go, oh right, it's about a bloke trying to steal pennies off a company, and he gets caught out.
It's the third album, isn't it? It really is.
Fucking robot woman is monstrous.
Oh, that's
still horrific to this day.
Covered in tinfoil. Yeah.
There you go. And it's better than the movies that have come since. Let's face it, there's not a Superman movie that's come out since Superman 2 that is you know, could clean its boots.
Yeah.
Just a fun, joyous movie. You know, he's the big boy scout, isn't he? He's like the, you know, the protector of Earth. This is what he's about, you know.
Yeah.
Really good stuff.
That's
my choice.
There you go. Superman's going to be brought up a few times in this show. So it's going to be interesting to see how we talk about him going on. I'll go next, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Moving from the classic DC to probably one of the biggest films of all time, I went for The Avengers. I know in the UK it was called Avengers Assemble, but I don't know But you guys, I never considered it to be called that. Do you know what I mean?
No. No. And for a ridiculous reason, they said, oh, they might confuse it with the, was it, 1996 movie with Ralph Fiennes?
Connery.
Like that was, nobody went and saw. Yeah. Or the TV series from the 70s and 60s. And also, I mean, I love, but no one watches them, do they?
Yeah.
What's going to happen
there? You know? Yeah. It was sort of judging the UK sort of fan base a bit harshly, wasn't it, really?
No understanding,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in the UK, it's Avengers Assemble, but let's face it, we all know it as The Avengers, the first film. Now, I picked this one because it's a film I can watch anytime, anywhere. I've had it on, certainly in the background, as I've been working on artwork before. It's like an album that you get so accustomed to. It's like, you know, one of your favourite albums of all time that you could just... It's comforting in some ways, you know, because it's so good. But also, I picked it because of the achievement that it actually did. Because if you look at it on paper, it never should have worked. Every comic fan wanted it to work. It was a realization of a lifelong dream that I never thought I'd see on screen. You know, certainly growing up in the early 90s, the idea of an Avengers film where Captain America's lined up next to Thor and the Hulk was a pipe dream. Do you know what I mean? That it didn't exist, and you kind of got to a point where you thought, well, that's never going to happen, and somehow it did. Obviously, on the way we had Iron Man 2, which was a bumpy road, even though, you know, I'm quite a fan of all of the Marvel canon. I think a lot of people
First Avengers still a set, it's just basically a setup for Avengers, but I wish they could have done more with that one, if I'm honest.
I like the war setting for that. I think they get Steve Rogers right in it. You know, when he dives on the grenade and stuff like that. I was like, oh, that's so good. They really get him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think until the point you put him in the suit, it loses itself a little there.
Right.
Yeah.
But
the only thing that sort of takes me out of the Avengers, because whenever I watch it, I'm solely in it, is the Captain America uniform in the Avengers.
But the ears, yeah.
It is the worst one of the lineup. If you saw them all lined up, what they're doing with him now is the best sort of costume, if you ask me. But just, you know, to have all those characters, and they're big, larger than life characters, and have it all work so well, and also achieve the impossible of getting the Hulk right. That is something. I think that was the biggest revelation of the film, because you just didn't expect it. And
Hulk steals moments when he punches Thor, or when he runs off and says, "I'm always angry," or that phrase he uses. Yeah. There's moments you think it's just, and especially when she goes and gets him.
Yeah,
you know
that moment when the Hulk arrives in the last battle and says he's always angry. I cheer inside every time. You know,
it's a great moment. Isn't it?
There's so many. I mean, if you think about it as well, the last 20 to 25 minutes of that film is a fight. It's just one massive fight. It's also a fight that has affected pretty much every superhero movie since then, because how do you do a big team movie without them fighting lots and lots of bad guys? I think Age of Ultron suffered from that. You know, it had. I like Age of Ultron. It gets a harsh rap in some ways, and deserving in some ways. I think they do make some missteps with that one.
I like Age of Ultron because they destroy my college. my old college was the set for Sarkovia, and I used to live there. And where Iron Man flies in and saves the people in the bathtub is where I used to live. That was the tower block I used to live in. So Sarkovia is my old town, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. And they destroyed it, and you were cheering the whole way.
Cheering,
I really liked the lightness of the first one, and when they kind of took it a bit darker in the second one, wasn't massively a fan of that, if I'm honest. I really enjoyed the kind of quip fest of the first one.
It's just so much fun, do you know what I mean? It is.
Yeah. This unabashed fun. It doesn't try to be dark. And
it had, because it had those sort of, you know, the pressure on top of it to work was massive. But at the same time, they were always... They're the underdog. With the first film, they were the underdog. Do you know what I mean? And they were just sort of left to it. Obviously, it was probably a nightmare production.
Now everyone's looking to pull them down, I think, now, aren't they? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? When they walked... They must have walked away from that first screening of Avengers and thought, well, we got there, didn't we? You know, we've had all the lead-up movies to it. We've done it. And we've made the Avengers. If we walked away now, we'd be a huge success.
Yeah.
You know? Definitely.
And, like, look at what it started... I mean, there's so many sort of favourite moments of mine. that I could pull out in that film. A lot of them, like we said, are the Hulk ones. But Loki, as a bad guy in that film, is just... I don't think the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe has lived up to that bad guy. And I don't, you know, obviously they've got to do different bad guys, and I love, like, Ronan in Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff like that. It's one of the criticisms that Marvel have, that their villains in their films are weak. But Loki never had that. I think Loki, you know, when you see him, that's an actor who's loving that part and is taking it seriously.
And, yeah.
And he uses the term snivelling Quim. How did that...
Speaking of Quims. Just speaking of Quims. One of the things I really liked about the Avengers was the fact that I was concerned about Black Widow being a sort of... You know, because she's not super-powered and she's a woman, that she was going to be relegated to background, you know, kicky-fighty, but not anything too exciting. But she's an actual total badass throughout the whole of this movie, and she's really useful to the team. Because you do think, you look at her and Hawkeye, and you think, why do they need you? They've got a Thor. Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. But there is the bit where they go round, you know, they go, the famous scene where they go round them all as they're getting ready to fight. And everyone's got somebody's got a hammer and someone's a Hulk, and then she sort of cocks her sort of 9mm handgun.
Yeah.
And I did think, oh no, how are they going to pull this off? But they do, like when she jumps up onto that little sort of flying motorcycle thing, a fucking incredible moment.
Yeah.
You know?
That scene where you have the big team moment with the theme, when you see it on the trailer, you know, obviously she stands out because she's got the tiny guns. When you watch it in the whole film, it's like, that makes sense. You know, she doesn't need all that other shit.
Yeah. I like when you said tiny guns too.
That's Dan's son's name, Tiny. So, you know, the Avengers, you know, I could talk about it all evening, you know.
I agree. It was almost my
choice. It's a really good one.
It's almost so good it's become a crutch to some of the Marvel films, which is why I think, and I'm a Marvel film, like, fanatic. Yeah. I think it's good that they're going in different directions. You know, you're getting the Guardians that no one knows. You're getting Doctor Strange. Mm. You know, they're not doing the... They can't do the what they did before. Now,
to me, it's like I've been reading the Avengers comics since the 70s, you know, and suddenly they're there. And I think this is... I actually thought we've won. Do you know what I mean? I actually do genuinely think some of the biggest movies, top 10 biggest movies ever, are movies of stuff that we reviled for reading growing up, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he's just a nerd or a geek, whatever they want to say. And then suddenly everyone is going to see them. And I think, well, now you understand, you know.
And the Joss Whedon sort of, like, direction's brilliant, you know, for a guy that hadn't handled a budget like that and a pressure like that. Obviously, I think the pressure got to him with the sequel. But in the first one, everything works. Everything clicks. Everything's on point. We got shows like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. from it.
Yep.
You know, everything running forward. It kind of... It didn't even... Like, Iron Man 2, I think, suffered from trying to build up to that Avengers sort of template, I think.
See, to me, I think Civil War is an Avengers movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it really is. It's because they have all the Avengers in it, and they have a big fight, and they all do loads in it. Yeah. You know? I know, I appreciate why they called it, because it's got that through line of narrative, but, you know, it's just... It's one big narrative construct to me, the Marvel movies. I don't think you can almost these days see them as singular entities, can you? Yeah. You have to see them as this one big overall story.
What, say 20 years time, people are gonna have to find out what order to watch these in.
In the here's a question for you all. In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that Avengers team, who's your favourite character?
Ooh. I'm gonna say Cap.
See, if you'd have asked me when it came out, I'd have probably said Cap.
Yeah.
But the more I watch it, the more I fall completely in love with Black Widow. I think she's amazing. And I think what I like about her in the movie is that they show her being super strong, but also being quite vulnerable at times.
Yeah.
So she's a really balanced, because I kind of hate this idea of the strong female character trope.
She's manipulative as well.
Yeah.
You know, that bit with the Russians, you think, oh, is that that's in the Avengers? I always get confused sometimes.
Yeah.
Which she's tied up.
He comes back again with Loki. Later on.
Yeah. Where he thinks he's got her, and then she just turns it around on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also there's that knowing. There was brilliant about the Black Widow character. There's that knowing, sort of like, oh god, I'm surrounded by so much testosterone. That there's almost a rolling eyes sort of thing going through it, where it's like, oh, yeah, they're just a bunch of like boys.
I like it in the sequel where she goes, you try and pick the hammer up, see if you're worthy, and she goes, I know I ain't. You know what I mean? Yeah. She's done a lot of bad things.
She doesn't need to prove anything. I mean? That's the thing. And the rest of it's all like swinging dicks in it, really.
Yeah,
but
I quite like that moment with Hawkeye's from the second one, when like that Quicksilver's giving him shit, and he's like, "I could shoot you. No one would know."
Yeah. Hawkeye's a character that's gotten better as it's gone on. I think in Civil War, that's the best he's been. He was brilliant in Civil War. I know he's only in it sparingly, but you know, I like him in that. Yeah,
I think Jeremy Renner's a charisma vacuum. I find him so... I forget he's in things. I absolutely forget. I forgot he was in Arrival when me and the hubby were talking about it the other day. I was like, oh, yeah, that was him. Yeah. I'd forgot.
He's in such a terrible advert at train stations at the moment. Yeah, about phone SIM cards or something. It's fucking awful.
It's like that in that fucking Tom Cruise Mission Impossible. Yeah. It's kind of just a bit of a nothing character in that.
Right.
And he's in the other Bourne film. The other Bourne film that everyone just forgets about.
Didn't even finish watching that one.
Yeah. Have you seen him in Louis C.K.? He plays like the drug dealer in it.
No.
Oh, he's brilliant in that. He suddenly realised, no, he's so good. He's actually a really good actor. He plays this sort of drug dealer. Good.
I think he needs to do more comedic stuff. That's why Hawkeye was better as it goes on, because he's more comedic.
Makes it
fun. When that comes out, that's funnier. But watching the first Avengers, it will always get my heckles up as well, because I know Iron Man is their big... You could arguably he's the biggest one for the mainstream audience.
Yeah, he's the biggest moneymaker, isn't he, for the single movies.
Yeah. He's the one I like the least as well. And not because of Civil War, let's ignore all of that. But there's one moment in the Avengers where I'm like, fuck you, pal. Fuck you. And that's
come on, what's this?
He's having the argument with Steve Rogers. And obviously Steve Rogers sort of says, you know, you take him out of take the man out of the suit, what is there? He goes, oh, I'm a genius. What was it? Billionaire.
Playboy or something.
Yeah, Playboy. And then he says, everything special about you came out of a bottle. And when he says that, I'm like, fuck you, pal. You obviously haven't seen the first Avenger, because he was special even before he was experimented on. You know, so I started to get a little bit heated about it then.
Yeah. I think his arc, when he kind of, at the end, when he kind of sacrifices himself and he does want to go through with it.
Yeah,
that really brings it back.
Yeah. And the way they will work as a team, you know, when you see it, it's just like, this is just perfection. Do you know what I mean? It is almost, for me, a perfect superhero movie. And I could watch it anytime, anywhere. And God bless it. God bless you.
Okay.
So that's me. Avengers, it's not Assemble, it's just the Avengers. So who wants to go next?
Good.
Stacey?
Yeah, go on, ladies first. Yeah.
Ladies, where?
I went first.
Yeah.
I had a really hard time choosing just one movie for this, because I had like a short list of about a billion.
Yeah.
But I ended up going with Deadpool, simply because I've watched it 5 times since it came out, and it only came out last February. So I think that's a pretty rousing endorsement of how much I enjoyed it in particular.
Yeah.
It's a really weird one for me, because I was sort of that weird nerd combination of trepidatious and stupidly excited when they announced that they were making it, because Deadpool has been one of my favourite characters for a really long time. But a lot of what makes Deadpool special in comics doesn't necessarily translate to cinema.
And
I thought that, you know, this could go really well, or it could go really, really, really wrong. But as soon as it started in the cinema and they had that sort of panning shot of an explosion in a car and a close-up on his crotch and those jokey credits rolling, I was like, oh my god, it's so perfect. And then my husband had to physically put my hand in my lap, because I kept getting so excited I kept punching him in the leg. I was like, oh my god, did you hear this bit? Oh, it's so funny. And he was like, seriously, calm down, or I'm escorting you from the cinema. But yeah, I mean, everything, like Ryan Reynolds is straight up perfect in this, and I have a hit and miss relationship with Ryan Reynolds. I think he's a beautiful, beautiful man, not necessarily the greatest actor though.
I love Ryan Reynolds. He's my man crush.
Oh no.
Had to be said.
Yeah.
I think I even like him in Blade. I quite liked him in that.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I don't mind Blade. When I was trying to decide on my worst comic book movie, my hubby was like, Blade Trinity, end of. And I was like, shut up. Ryan Reynolds gets his top off in that movie.
He's the best thing about that film.
Yeah, when he's tied up and he's... Was it sugar-frosted shit? Or he uses that phrase, something like that,
and,
isn't it?
And he calls someone a thunder cunt, which is the best word for that. he's... There's a lot of films, I don't know whether it's the films or him in particular, there's a few things I've seen him in that I've been like, ugh. But then, I mean, have you guys seen The Voices? Because that's a really good film.
Was that the one where his animals talk to him?
Yeah.
Yes, and he's a serial killer, but he doesn't seem to really notice.
That's actually
a really, really good film. But I think Deadpool might have been the role that Ryan Reynolds was born to play, because he...
Yeah.
Just completely bang on. And what I loved about it as well was they weren't afraid to make him ugly. There are other movies, and Spider-Man's the one that rolls off my head, where they're like, you can't wear a mask, and he's got to be pretty, and he's got to have his face on the screen, where there's a lot of scenes in Deadpool where Ryan Reynolds just looks straight up disgustrous.
Yeah, but let's face it, Stacey, if you weren't married and he came up to you and he had his, you know, weird face, you'd still do him, wouldn't you?
I would.
If Ryan Reynolds is listening and he's ever at a convention that I'm at, I'm not going to argue with him if he wants to pick me up.
You mean in a sort of piggyback way? That's good. Yeah.
I think it's great. And I love TJ Miller as Weasel as well. When they announced that he was going to be in it, I turned to my hubby and I was like, if he doesn't play Weasel, they've entirely missed a trick, because he would be wonderful.
What was he in before that?
The thing that I know him from, I mean, he was in Cloverfield, but you don't see him much because he's the cameraman.
He's in Silicon Valley. Have you watched Silicon Valley? Yeah, that is such a good show.
That's what I know
him
from. Oh, it's brilliant.
And, I don't know that one.
When he says the line, I would come with you, but I don't want to.
I don't want to.
So many good lines in the film.
Yeah. I like the little old blind lady he lives with. That's cool as well.
Yeah.
Old blind Al. See, that was one of the things I was concerned about, because I can't really explain to people very well why Deadpool's one of my favourite characters.
Yeah.
Because sometimes he's an actual asshole.
Yeah.
Like, there's a whole period in the 90s comics where he sometimes puts blind Al in a room just with a ton of, like, knives and spiky shit sticking out of the walls, and, like, suck that bitch, and just runs away. And he's like, oh...
Yeah.
That's not nice.
He's so funny, people forget. He started off as a villain, and also he's a killer. He doesn't.
Yeah.
He's completely unhinged.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's. I like the fact that I think they got the tone really right for this movie, because there was a lot of really good action sequences. Like, I loved the bit with the 12 bullets. I was literally, I've never come out of a cinema before seeing something and having my face hurt from grinning like a twat the entire time.
Yeah.
But I came out of that and I was like, can I go back in and watch it again immediately? I went to see it on Mother's Day and I had to text my mum to tell her I was going to be late. I was like, oh, I'm running a bit late to see you, but I'll be there soon. Just sitting there in the cinema sharing on popcorn.
I went and saw it with my son, and my son, I think he was 17 or 18 at that point, and it's quite an uncomfortable film to watch with your son, because it got to the sort of strap-on anal moment, and I couldn't look at my son, and I can just vaguely see him out of my peripheral vision sort of looking at the ceiling, where he's like, this is embarrassing, watching this in front of my dad.
Yeah. I took my mum to see that film, and I also took her to see Dallas Buyers Club, and that opens with quite a raucous rodeo pen sex scene, and I was just like, why do I keep taking my mum to these
scenes?
What am I doing? Deadpool, perfect, so funny, love the costumes, I think the effects are amazing. I'm concerned a bit about Deadpool 2. Just because of all the chopping and changing that's been going on. But
I like the idea, because I know the director of the first one wanted to make a bigger budget, flashier film. I like the idea that Ryan Reynolds and the writer are sort of say, no, let's keep it smaller, like the first, you know, everything that worked with the first one, let's do more of that.
Yeah.
There's actually not as many wide shots in the first one as you get in normal superhero movies, because it's very focused in on faces and reactions and conversations for a big part of it.
Yeah.
You know, apart from that big scene with the helicarrier crashing down, it's you know, my favourite fight takes place in a road, basically, you know, on a bridge. So, it's not as big as people... It gives the impression of being bigger than it is, I think, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Such a good film. And a massive...
That did well from dialing it back a little. Yeah. It's more the character focus, isn't it? On it's all about Deadpool.
Yeah, and similarly, yeah, try and sort of tie in the X universe. Which, my personal opinion, Bryan Singer should just let it go. Stop giving it to him.
Is Stan in a sex club, isn't it?
Pardon? Yes.
Yeah.
Stan.
He's comparing there, isn't he?
That's right. Yeah.
So
that's brilliant. Yeah.
It's all the little sort of throwaway jokes as well, like him and his baby hand and his, you know, when he's like, "Oh, I bet it looks massive in this hand," and I'm like, just dying in the cinema.
Rob Liefeld's in it as well, isn't he? Which is cool.
Yeah.
Yes.
We didn't hear about that at all, did we?
No, we didn't. So I think that was a very good choice and the most recent one, I think.
But, I love this is a loving. I thought we were going to have an argument about whose best film it was, but I like the fact this is a loving. That's what I like about it.
Yeah.
Dan, you've got an interesting one, haven't you?
Yeah, I went a bit left field. There's so many good new sort of comic book films.
Yeah,
that I was sort of like spoiled for choice, but I thought I'd go checked out the shelf and thought which one kind of really made an impact on me when it first came out, and it was the Crow.
Yes,
it's a fantastic one. It came out a really interesting period where superhero films were kind of light on the ground, and this is not a superhero film, but I don't know if you could call it.
Yeah,
it's kind of definitely got all the tropes of it. It came out in 1994, and the comic book it was based on was in 89.
Yeah.
So I got to admit, I saw the film before I knew of the comic. I think I saw it in the credits, and then I tracked down the trade of it from, I think it was Fantagraphics, and it's
Mike W. Barr, isn't it? I think.
Yeah. It's relatively faithful, the comic, to the film. I mean, the comic book Crow is a little more kind of mental and lost it over the film version. Which
he's
is
less
kind of
poetic, isn't he, I think?
Yeah. Mm. So if you don't know, it tells a story, I've written this straight from Wikipedia, tells the story of Eric Draven, a rock musician who is revived from the dead to avenge his own death, as well as the rape and murder of his fiancée, Shelley. I always one thing about this film, with Brandon Lee died, obviously, from it was a prop gun that wasn't checked properly. It had some shite in the barrel.
Yeah.
And when the kind of the blank went off, it killed him, essentially. Yeah. Would the film be as big if that hadn't have happened to him?
Yeah, I don't know, you know. It certainly got, because it was a sort of goth film, it got that sort of goth crowd involved in this sort of tragic died at 27 kind of scenario, didn't it? I know he wasn't.
Yeah.
It's part of that sort of scenario. I mean, I'd watched Rapid Fire, I think was his first one, and it was
a big
showdown in Little Tokyo or something, I think it's called, with Dolph Lundgren. And I really liked him from them, and he's very charismatic.
Yeah.
You know, and then he gets that, and it was a real shame, because I think he was a real lost talent.
It is really sad. And like, I remember when I had the VHS and I watched it over and over, and the VHS had like a short sort of 10-minute interview with him, like beforehand, of, you know, picking the role and what was important to him about the role. And he's very sort of, because it's all about death and coming back from death, you know, some of the stuff he says there just breaks your heart, because you just think, you know, what a talent to lose. Because I think, you know, even if some of it dates, maybe dated now, I haven't seen it for a while, but his performance is fantastic in that film.
Yeah, he does really well.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first got introduced to this, someone said, there was a couple of goths in the crowd I was hanging around with, and one of the girls said, "Oh, Dan, you've got to see The Crow. You love comic books, you love this.
Mm.
It's darker than Batman." And that fucking got my back up big time.
Right.
No, I'd not heard of The Crow. So, like, when at that age, being a bit of a dick, when someone said, "Oh, like, it's darker than Batman," I thought, can't be. can't be. But I think I went to see it a couple of weeks later, and I was like, this is quality. And had an awesome soundtrack, got The Cure, Stone Temple Pilots, Nine Inch Nails, Pantera. And the film is essentially black and white. There's heavy use of blacks.
Yeah.
The colour palette is very desaturated. It's really well done. I was surprised afterwards when, like, after you hear of Brandley passing away, there's shots that are not him, and I wouldn't have been able to tell, because essentially it's just kind of in a film like that where you're not in broad daylight all the time, you can hide that thing away.
Yeah.
And he's got the face paint as well, but it's such a real kind of emotional, kind of a good old revenge flick that just hits all the right spots.
Yeah,
it's really good.
It's a fantastic script as well. I remember I used to quote some of the lines. Like when he's talking to the junkie and he says, "Mother is the name for God on the lips and hearts of all children." You know, like,
that's the line.
Just things like that. It's just beautiful poetic stuff. And but what in with some people delivering those lines, it would have been probably cheesy. When I said it, that was awful. But when he says it, it's brilliant. So yeah, when you mentioned you were going to pick that one, Dan, I was like, oh, all the memories came flooding back.
Yeah,
you know, because it was a film that I didn't just watch once. You know, no. over a couple of years, it was watched a lot.
Yeah, it was with VHS. It was often watched in my house. Yeah, yeah. And then they did Mark Dacascos. Was it played the sequel? Is that right?
No, it was the French guy with City of Angels. I've forgotten his name.
Vincent something, wasn't it?
Wasn't Vincent Cassell? Was it?
Yeah, no. Oh, I can't remember now. And
Mark
then there was Dacascos did the TV series.
Ah, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, there's been three, isn't there? I think was there three movies?
I think there's four.
Sure.
Yeah, I think four. I think towards the end, it's straight to DVD fodder. Do you know what I mean?
There was Edward Furlong was in the last one.
Oh God,
there was Crow Salvation with another guy in it.
Yeah. Iggy Pop's in it at some point, isn't he? Isn't
he's in the second one?
He's in the sequel. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was the young lady who played the Yellow Power Ranger. She's one of the baddies.
Oh, it's always a good sign of a movie, isn't it?
Yeah. Great film.
Very good.
I've not seen it. I don't think I've watched it in the last 6 months to a year, and I should rectify that.
I think.
Yeah, I need to see if it's on Netflix or something because I haven't watched it for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. So it went to a vote. All of those films were cracking. Shall I just read out the results?
Yes. Yeah, go for it.
In fourth place with 17% was The Crow.
Okay.
Which I thought we'd got a higher rating than I thought it was going to, even though, you know, I love it, but because it is it's quite niche, I guess, and it's been a while, I thought it might have been glossed over.
I think through these polls it suffers a little bit from not everyone seeing it, and I think if some people saw some of the suggestions they might vote higher, you know, in a couple of them.
Third place with 19%, Superman 2.
Oh, what's wrong with people? Sickness.
I love that he tried to justify on my one, didn't he? Monsters.
He likes it because it's a loving, and then all of a sudden he comes third, and then the gloves are off.
We're back to it again, aren't we? Back to the people, the millennials, who want to see something in 2 minutes and can't decide what fucking avocado to buy in the fucking...
More than one kind of avocado.
You know, you've seen them, Stacey. People, they stand in the aisle looking at an avocado for 5 minutes. I've already finished my shopping.
Oh, I don't go shopping. I do everything online because people scare me.
Yeah, people are shit. Anyway, and in second place with 21% is Deadpool.
Ooh.
So, number one with 43% is The Avengers.
Hey. Oh. That was almost my choice, I've got to tell you. Almost my first choice. I actually think I texted you two guys at like 1 a.m. because I'm weird, it's always playing on my mind what I should choose, and I felt a guilt trip, you know.
Yeah.
I don't vote on the polls anymore, I just retweet them.
Right, okay. Kind of,
I want to stay fresh for the show.
Yeah.
I voted because I wanted Deadpool to win.
This is the only week that I voted, and it worked.
Shenanigans! Shenanigans!
Polls are not rigged. We're not
rigged, are they? You can't vote more than once, can you? I don't think on these things.
No,
you could have more than one Twitter account and do that way.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I've got my Snufkin Diablo fucking Twitter account. I can use.
Dear God,
Snufkin Diablo.
We discovered that Jester Diablo also was called Snufkin at school, so I created a Snufkin Diablo Twitter account.
Just leave me alone, Tony. Just don't be a sore loser.
Maybe me and Dan laugh for about an hour where we're messaging back saying he hasn't noticed yet.
look, don't be a bad loser. You might do better in the second round.
Round 2.
TV shows based on a comic book property.
Right, TV shows. I think we all agree we watch a lot of TV, don't we, between us?
Mm.
Or we try to. There's almost too much to watch now.
I watch it through the window at Rumbelows.
I say, talking to TV now, that fucking tab with Tom Hardy is fantastic. You should be watching.
I've heard this is good. Yeah, someone's really saying this.
Can you understand what he's saying?
You don't really need to.
He can't. In often,
he's glaring out of the darkness.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so comic book TV shows. We all watch them. We all love them. It's hard to narrow them down, but we had to this week. So who wants to go first with their choice on this one?
Shall I go first?
Go on, then. Go on then, gangster.
My one, I picked Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. Not because it was my favourite TV show.
It was.
I picked it as more of a talking point, but there's so much great stuff nowadays. Like the first series of Daredevil is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
and I think hands down Marvel is kicking DC's TV ass output. Yep.
Oh, that's interesting.
Bring it.
I just think the Marvel ones with the beginning, middle, and end, they got a finishing point. I watched The Flash and I enjoy it, but
you're talking about the Netflix ones, aren't you, really? Because you could argue that the mainstream ones like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. might, you know, and I really enjoy Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but when it comes to a longer form sort of TV show,
I think that works as well, a little bit niche as well, isn't it? Agent Carter, there's only two seasons.
That's quite sad about it. That's really good.
I like that. I like her. She's good.
Yeah, but Louis and Clark. Lois and Clark.
So yeah, for this went from started airing in 93 to 97, and it suffered, in my opinion, with dreadful casting. There's Dean Cain as Superman and Clark Kent, which I never was massively convinced of him in either role.
Yeah,
wasn't massively over the happy with Lois Lane. Terry Hatcher, and John Shee is Lex Luthor. Never really.
He didn't really do it for me. I've got to be honest. No. Yeah.
Why did you pick this again?
It was a format that they kind of like. They copied from the John Byrne kind of. He was revolutionising kind of like Superman. They've taken that formula from the comics. Yeah. And they kind of.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you remember you and I were at the same UCAC years ago?
Yeah.
We didn't know each other then, but we were at the same UCAC. Now, do you remember the advert they showed for this?
No.
And it got a lot of laughs in the audience. Now, the original advert was sort of... It looks like something out of... You know that movie Ghost where they're doing the Potter's Wheel type thing?
Yeah.
It looks something a bit like that.
Neither, really?
Superman wasn't in costume, and they both just sort of had their shirts off and were sort of cuddling and, like, grinning at the camera, and it was this sort of teaser for about a minute, and then it sort of closed up and he had a tattoo of Superman on his arm.
Oh god, I remember the adverts in comics and they were fucking dreadful.
And I remember being at that convention, maybe you weren't in the hall at that point, but I remember everyone just laughing at it. And the bloke from DC going, no, you don't understand, it's like a romance story about Lois and Clark, and everyone just, you know, sort of cynically English audience just bollocks.
You know, to the wrong audience.
Yeah.
Essentially, kind of, it was the whole thing was a will they, weren't they, between Lois and Clark each week with small episodes of kind of Superman. And I felt like, although the series wasn't especially great, it did try to kind of carry on the tone of like the lighthearted Superman, but still being that kind of defender of all that was right. And not, it wasn't any patch on for Christopher Reeve, but they were trying to do like the similar kind of character.
Right.
And I felt it always served as a good kind of one of those shows that moved superheroes closer to where we have them now, where they're everywhere on the TV and at the cinema. And it was certainly kind of like a staple of my kind of Saturday night, at least try and watch an episode of that before doing whatever.
It was around sort of 6 o'clock, wasn't it? It was prime time, sort of five.
Yeah, I mean, you'd find a TV, superhero TV show like on a Saturday night on
BBC
ITV. It was a BBC One, so it was kind of like. That's a prime time spot, and it was big news at the time.
But I think they made the mistake of the first couple of seasons. They get together? Then wasn't it the third season they actually got together?
Yeah,
yeah.
And you fuck it over there because the premise of the series is will they, won't they, and then they will. Okay.
Yeah. It was like that. What was that Bruce Willis TV series that he was in before he went big?
Moonlighting.
It was like that one, wasn't it? The last series they get it on, and you think, oh, that's ruined it a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember the opening sequence. She sort of slides down a laundry chute slide or something.
Yeah.
And then she looks up and you can just see down the top. And it was just primarily just done for that sort of single shot of her looking up at the camera and you can see down her cleavage. And it was just sort of, it was just bordering on that sort of 90s exploitation thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Much as I would crawl over naked glass stick pins in Terry Hatcher's shit. Do you know what I mean? It was sort of...
pardon!
Too much?
No. Oh, fucking hell. You can't top that.
It's quite a common phrase.
Is that why you watched it, then,
Dan? She became big news from that. Like, she went to do a fucking Bond film.
She did, didn't she?
Did right.
Did, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she was good in Tango and Cash.
Yes. Everything's good about Tango and Cash.
That fucking film was brilliant. That's another prison gladiator film. They get fights in that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
cool.
So
yeah, so Lewis and Clark.
So,
yeah,
but we didn't really get to the bottom of why you picked it, because you haven't said anything good about it.
I just thought it would make a good talking point. I think it would make a good talking point. I can't say I was overly enamoured with it. It's kind of, I wouldn't hold it up as like a beacon of good TV.
Yeah. But, at the time, we had fuck all else, didn't we, really?
Yeah,
we
didn't have that's the else. Thing. Yeah. we didn't have any fucking thing else. Like when I think I was very much like you, Tony, if like the Punisher film with Dolph Lundgren, I would eat the outcast the Punisher. There's no mention of his fucking symbol. And there's hardly anything to do with the Punisher.
Sort of like
but
cheesy sort of Batman sort of like speech bubbles, you know, their sound effects. It's
like the David Hasselhoff Nick Fury movie.
Oh. Yeah, I watched that. I know this is awful, but this is all I've got.
Yeah.
Like a fucking druggie just trying to get any hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Now look at us. It's like train spotting. There's just too much.
Yeah, it's too much in there now.
Right,
yeah.
So that was Lewis and Clark.
To be fair, I don't think that's going to be winning any of those polls.
If you can't give a reason why it should, I don't
know. Why should the listeners?
How's that rash, by the way? Is it all right?
Hey?
Hmm?
How's your rash?
Oh, still there.
Okay, good.
I'll apply some ointment before I go to bed. Just sort it out.
Oh, dear.
Listen to the outtakes if you want to hear what that's about.
Yeah. Right, so, Stacey, do you want to go next?
Okie dokie. I kind of struggled with this one as well, simply because it was only when sitting down and trying to figure out what to choose that I realised that I don't like many comic book-based TV shows. I do not watch any of the DC ones anymore except The Flash.
Right.
And I'm falling out of love with that as well. This season's been a tiny bit shit. I don't watch any of the Marvel.
Girl. Sorry, Stace, have you tried Supergirl?
Yes.
Not like it?
Yes. No don't like it at all. Right. It's too soap opery for me. Not enough Supergirl. And then I realised that I don't really like any of the Marvel ones except Jessica Jones, but I've only had one series of that as well, so I don't know.
Right, I'm going there. So that one. Leave it.
So in the end, I sort of looked back into the far past, and by that I mean the early 2000s. and I went with the Patrick Warburton version of The Tick.
Yes. I'm glad you can go with the current one, because I think that's by far the superior one. I love that series as well. Brilliant stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the pilot for the newer one, and I loved Peter Unpronounceable Surname in it, but I didn't necessarily love the pilot. I'd like to see a bit more to really know where it's going.
I think that's totally what that pilot is, isn't it? You watch it just thinking, I need another few episodes before I can really decide.
Oh, they're being clever, do you think? Yeah.
Also, I hate the weird new suit that looks sky blue and streaky, and it's very weird.
Yeah.
I basically am in love with Patrick Warburton's voice, and I always have been.
He's genius, isn't he? Absolute genius, yeah.
He can talk in anything, and I'll just be like, oh, hello, and then my knees will melt, and I'll turn into a puddle.
Is that him in Ted 2 as well? Does he dress up in it in Ted 2, is that right?
Yes, he does, at a convention.
At the New York Comic Con, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, he looks absolutely amazing. I mean, that blue suit looks like the worst thing ever to wear. I bet it was sweaty as bollocks. And I love the fact that the little antenna move, they're adorable. But The Tick is just ridiculous, isn't it?
It is just, yeah. And that's what the comic's like, though. That's why it's such a good adaptation, you know?
Yeah. I love the comics anyway. I think The Tick is a little bit like Deadpool, but less terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, in the sense that he's crackers, but he's, like, adorably crackers.
He's a little bit more indie as well. He's a little bit more sort of edgy and cool, I think. Even the cartoon's good. You must have watched the cartoon as well.
Absolutely love the cartoon.
Yeah.
And I think Townsend Coleman did a great job voicing the cartoon as well.
Yeah.
But I am so sad that there's not more of that Patrick Warburton series to watch, because it's just unadulterated fun.
Yeah.
Like, you watch it and you pretty much laugh from start to finish. And
yeah,
it's just, I like watching. I admit I do like things that are a bit dark, and like, I do really like the first series of Daredevil. I think it's great. But sometimes you just want to watch, especially with the things going on in the world at the moment and how raised my blood pressure and anxiety levels are pretty much constantly now. It's really great to just put something on and just forget about all the crazy shit and just laugh.
Yeah.
Like, it's really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a show that I think suffered from just the network that it was on just didn't support it. Do you know what I mean? There weren't any adverts, and therefore no one watched it, even though like, everyone that watched it loved it. I'm going to be honest, I still haven't seen it. I need to correct that.
What was it on the Sci-Fi Channel over here, was it? Is that right?
I can't remember something where it was on.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. It's out on DVD as well, I think. You can
I think
get
it,
on
it
DVD,
was Fox in America, wasn't it? Was it Fox?
Right, okay.
Patrick Warburton turned up last night. We had Scream 3 on, just watching a bit of that, and he's in that.
He's not in that,
is he? I said, it's the tick. It's the tick.
Fucking Jay and Silent Bob are in that. Everyone's in that movie, aren't they? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So
also in Men in Black 2, is it?
Oh yeah.
Patrick Warburton. Okay. Yeah.
He's also in he's in so much, and every time he turns up though, he's brilliant in it.
I'm in Men in Black 3. Have you seen that?
What's the name of the baddie in that? Are you purporting to be that character?
No, I'm gonna tweet you it now so you'll know.
Okay.
Oh dear God. So millennial. So there you go. The Tick from 2001. Blind.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a lifetime ago, isn't it? Well, it is for some people. Jesus, I feel old.
There's always that joke in the animated one in the first series, when first episode, there's Chair Face, and he writes Chair Face on the moon, but he doesn't quite. He only gets the CH and part of the A. For the rest of the series, whenever there's a shot of the moon, it's like the CH and part of the A. This is fucking great.
I'd love them to do a... Is it Paul the Samurai as well, is the other series he did? That's great stuff, isn't it? He's quite a big deal TV right now, isn't he, as I understand it?
Ben Edlund, he does a lot. Mm-hmm. He got involved with Buffy and Angel. He's doing a lot of that.
He's like one of these sort of big writer's room kind of guys, isn't he? I think he's sort of much, much sought after. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so there you go. So, Tony, want to go first or shall I?
Oh, shall I go first? I know we're doing a double header, aren't we, really, here? It's very much, to be fair to us, it's very much the same series, isn't it, in many ways, what we're going to talk about now. You go first, because yours is chronologically, it's the first one, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
My pick was Daredevil, Netflix Daredevil. Now, this is series one I'm mostly talking about, even though I did enjoy series two as well. First half was better than the second half, if you ask me. But series one was just... You know, as soon as you start it, I don't think there's been a TV series that I was more excited about it appearing, because it just felt like, will they get it right? Especially after, obviously, there was the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie, which has its haters, has its, you know, I don't think it's that bad.
I think it's got some good moments.
It does have some good moments. It has some ridiculous moments, but what films don't?
I think Farrell would make a good... I'm going to put it out there. I think if given the right script, he'd make a good Bullseye, I think.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. But after that, for a few years, Daredevil kind of became a bit of a joke, you know, certainly to the mainstream audiences, I think. So for Marvel to get it back was... You know, that sense of hope. And then when they announced, oh, Netflix, you're going to see the whole series on day one if you want, you know, which is always, that's just hugely exciting anyway. Even though I didn't binge watch the whole lot in one go, which means you have to sort of like ignore
that. Raises my anxiety and blood pressure, Stacey, similar to your blood politics.
Yeah.
Is that due to spoilers? Because people cannot contain themselves.
Exactly. Because people.
Yeah. I hate spoilers. But if you haven't seen Daredevil, I'm going to spoil it. No.
Yeah.
But there is that sense of, like, you have to ignore the internet for a couple of weeks, don't you? Because someone will put a headline. But just everything about it. I mean, what I love about Daredevil, the series as well, it's redefining that character and introducing him, like, to the mainstream world. There's the tie-ins to the Marvel Universe, in words only, when they just talk about the Battle of New York, etc., you know, even as a nerd, I just quite like those things. It's like, oh, it all ties together. Oh my God.
Yeah.
but just concentrating on the characters and seeing Matt Murdock as a lawyer. I mean, it becomes less so as it goes on, because Daredevil becomes more of a part of his life. From the fight scenes, episode 2, when he has the infamous corridor fight, which I think they outdid in the second series, in episode 3.
I completely agree with that, because everyone, things catch fire, don't they?
Yeah.
On the internet, everyone goes, oh, the amazing corridor scene. You don't see the fucking fight. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He just flies out of a door and then flies back in.
Yeah.
There must have been a few stuntmen thinking that was an easy day's money.
I love the way you're just judging all stuntmen there.
Thing in Daredevil, the crime in that people commit, and they're not like just handbag snatchers. Like, there were people being shipped overseas, like women in crates.
Yeah.
And it's fucking horrid. The people, the criminals that were horrid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it still had that sense of fun in some ways with the, like Foggy Nelson. Just brilliant.
He's
in
so
it.
Adorable.
He's so amazing. He gets more so in the second series when he just has enough of being messed
about. Girl, he ends up has a friends with benefits relationship with. I think she's good as well.
Yeah, they do that really well. But Daredevil aside, the revelation for me is Wilson Fisk, the Kingpin.
Oh,
because
me too.
I consider Daredevil to be an origin series of two men. It's how Daredevil becomes a fully fledged Daredevil, and how Wilson Fisk becomes the Kingpin, and the way they balance those two origin stories, showing them both as characters, rather than just you're trying to spoil my crime syndicate. There's so many layers to the Kingpin.
Oh, he that is an absolute masterclass in acting for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You watch that geezer's face so much, don't you? Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah.
I wasn't sure of D'Onofrio at first, because he felt a bit pantomimey to me.
Yeah.
But then it got to the scene where... Oh, do I want to spoil?
Yeah.
Spoilers. He's on a date. I'm not going to say exactly what happens, but he's on a date and with a lady, and he does something, and he's like, yeah, this is the kind of guy that I am. And she's like, bitching, let's keep dating. Yeah. And I was like, oh, he's a double hard badass. Oh, he's genuinely scary.
Yeah. And those moments where, he seems quite soft in some ways. He's got very soft spoken.
Oh, yeah.
Which means
he's very loyal.
Yeah. And when he has these flashes of violence, like the infamous car door scene, it's shocking. And you realise this guy cannot be messed with. And plus, they keep it close to the comic books, because he just kicks Daredevil's ass. But
Miller does it. They take that off Miller, and they do it so well. That scene where Wilson Fisk, who by that point, by the time Miller had taken over him, he was just sort of a bit of a fat bloke who, and Miller turns him around. There's that scene where all the people come and attack him, and he says, "Oh, let's have a workout. Everyone attack me."
Yeah.
And Miller does it so well, and they do that throughout the series.
And
they do that where suddenly you're impressed with him, aren't you? You know?
And that whole pacing of Wilson Fisk, kind of, he doesn't really, in some ways, he doesn't want to become the Kingpin. And like when he's being taken away and sort of says to the cops, "I realise what I have to be now. I always thought I was the righteous man." That speech and that whole setup, the last two episodes of that Devil, it just gets your blood pumping. You're like, oh my God, everything's going to kick off.
And then he's staring at the wall, the whole rabbit in a snowstorm. Yeah.
That the painting that he's absolutely enamoured with, and when it cuts back to like the childhood of him sitting there looking at the wall.
Yeah.
And then it ends the series with that as well, with him in prison. Looking at the wall, it's just so well done. It's just that writing that's so accomplished and knows what it's doing, and it just follows that thread, and it just pays off all the way through.
And I'll tell you what, Bendis has got to be due some credit for this and the one I'm talking about, because the layers he puts in these characters in the series he does, so influential. I know he's like a consultant, isn't he, on these series? Yeah. It's incredible.
I mean, they
stuff.
Take heavily from The Man Without Fear.
Yeah.
And, yes, they do as well, which is just brilliant. Yeah,
I think they,
especially in the first series. Yeah,
yeah, I think they fucked up the way they did Elektra. If I'm honest.
Yeah, okay. I totally agree. Hated her so much.
Yeah, I was just
okay.
Yeah. It was kind of when the second series went. Me and my wife don't really care about this Elektra thing. Mm. It wasn't.
It's
really
a series of two halves as well. Like, literally, and I was totally on board with the Punisher. I was so completely on board with that. That when
totally
it kind of
outshines. Yeah, it's just killing it.
Yeah,
and when they pull it back a bit for me when they're on, they're fighting on the rooftop and they're fighting all those ninjas, and I'm thinking, okay, I'll go with it. And then suddenly they start getting picked off by the Punisher on a rooftop across the way, and I think, that's exactly what you would do. That's but
also,
Punisher, you
also
know.
It's kind of it is kind of what he'd do, but it was I was a bit disappointed. I almost wanted to see him
really?
Get a little more involved.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. I'm hoping that the series is a go for that. Is are they filming it or do
they?
Yeah,
they are filming it. Yeah, they've been filming.
Oh, brilliant!
Because
no, it's going to be fantastic.
Because Karen, what's her name? The character in Daredevil. The
Karen
one.
Page.
Karen Page. She's in the Punisher series.
Is she?
Yeah.
He was great. I mean, Punisher's one of my top characters. I love him.
And
we've talked about his films before. Yeah. And in that one, they finally got it right for me.
Because yeah. I mean, once again, with like the Kingpin and Daredevil, they made him a character. It wasn't like he's just this. Yeah.
Which is what he is in the comics. Yeah. You know, he's got motivations, and he's not just this sort of blind, boring sort of psychopath. He's got this huge motivation behind what he does. You know,
that's what when these series do well and the films do well is when they go to the source material and get it right. I mean, the reason these characters have been around for 30, 40 years is because they do something that speaks to people and is relevant.
Yeah.
So when some exec says, right, we're going to do this film and then change everything about it and then wonder why it's not successful.
Yeah.
And from a fan point of view, Dan, it's the right thing to do as well. Like, that's what I want to see. But from a commercial point of view, that's where they should be going because this has worked for years.
Yeah.
You know, in The Punisher or Daredevil and stuff like that, you know.
Mm. Yeah. So there you go.
Right. Before you move on, though, I do want to just do a little shout out to Charlie Cox's absolutely delightful chin. What a beautiful chin.
One thing that kind of cuts me up, and this is kind of spoiler heavy for people who haven't read Daredevil, is the amount of shit coming Karen Page's way and Matt Murdock.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll ever get to see that in the series.
I thought they were going there with that at one point. I thought maybe they'll go that way, especially at the start of the first series. I thought, are they going there with this? You know.
Yeah.
The Karen Page arc had such a twist in the first series as well that it was one of those, oh shit, moments. I won't spoil it, but
She's just great as well. She's great in the role.
And it's also responsible for one of my favourite TV theme tunes. I could watch that Daredevil credit sequence.
Oh, okay.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's just fantastic, and it just perfectly sort of represents what that is. And like when you see the sort of the character at the end with the classic Daredevil logo, it's just just brilliant,
Spot.
So that's my pick. And Tony, follow it up.
Right. Well, mine is essentially a sequel in many ways, isn't it? So there's a few recurring characters, and it's set in the same place. And it's certainly in the comics it's interrelated, you know, it really is. And I'm going with Jessica Jones. We've only had one series so far, and I will go as far to say that this is a groundbreaking series. I genuinely believe it to be. I think it deals with such adult subjects, but it does it in the way that Marvel Comics has always done it, by paralleling it into a sort of superhero situation. You know, the way that, you know, the X-Men was basically racism, and, you know, the Hulk was basically the building up of the arms race, and Spider-Man was teenage angst and stuff like that. This goes for basically sexual assault and PTSD. This is what it deals with. And it does it by paralleling it and by showing it as using the Purple Man as the sort of a sexual predator. But it doesn't do it in the way that a lot of, you know, these sort of cliched thrillers you see on television or horror movies do it, by having, you know, sort of someone who's cutting themselves with razors and hanging about in dark alleys ready to rape women. It does it a lot more subtly, and it does it from the mental angle. So it addresses it from the sort of psychological effects that she feels through this sort of historic relationship to the Purple Man that you flash back to and then you finally see again, you know. Tennant is absolutely brilliant.
Terrifying. Yeah. There's one particular scene that involved a lick, and I felt goosebumps of like, oh, that's so wrong, and like, ugh. You almost feel a bit violated as you're watching, which is, it's amazing on his part, because I didn't think he could do anything other than delightful, beautiful man.
And that's why it works, mate, I think. Why it works, because he's been this sort of smiley, happy character. And for me, it also works a little bit because he'd had a little bit of work done. There's a little bit of the sort of vanity in the look of the character as well, you know?
Mm.
And he's got that sort of, there's almost a Joker-esque quality to his face, especially the way he was made up in it, and the sort of the purple of the costume that he wore and stuff, you know, the suit that he wore.
I think sometimes in the series, for me personally, he slightly overdoes it a little.
Really?
Certainly with all the times he's sort of saying Jessica, and he chooses scenery for me sometimes a bit too much. But then they'll have those scenes where, you know, like all those people lined up on chairs, ready to hang themselves, and they'll bring, yeah. they'll bring it back to this whole, this guy, you know, a power like this is terrifying, absolutely terrifying.
But what he does as well is that you see moments of vulnerability with him as well, especially further on. You know, there's little moments, there's a little chink in his armour, aren't there, with, you know, he's almost, you're following his story almost as much as you're following Jessica Jones's story, you know. He's very good. Kristen, is it Kirsten or Kristen? I don't know how you say it.
Anyone know? Kristen Ritter?
I think it's Kristen, yeah.
She's brilliant. I mean, yeah, who thought that who thought that me as a, you know, 28-year-old man would be enjoying a TV enjoying a TV series about a bit of a slutty woman, you know, who's a superhero, doesn't wear a costume, and then claims she can fly, and you never really see her flying. You know, yeah. She sort of jumps up a bit as they sort of cut,
for
don't
me,
they?
She was the one, when it was cast, I thought, I haven't really liked this actress in anything I've really seen her in. You know, I've seen her in a few things, but, you know, can she play it off? And I thought she was a revelation, because she's my favourite part of the series, by far.
Yeah, she's so good, isn't she? Yeah. And everything plays in her face again. She's got this sort of attitude, doesn't she, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd read Alias. Alias ran 2001-2004, it was 28 issues, and then it went into Pulse magazine, and then Pulse comic, and then she went into the New Avengers as well. But, and I had loved Alias, and I really wondered how they pulled it off. And the Purple Man isn't everything in the comic. There's a lot more to the comic. You know, there's a really important scene in the comic where she visits him in prison, and you get a sense of what has happened in the past. But I think they translated certainly the mood. Michael Gaydos, wasn't he, who was the artist on the original comic series, and the colour and the tone and the framing of the series is very evocative of the comic, and I think they do that really well.
Plus, they introduced Luke Cage. And stuff,
you know. Sorry,
they introduced Luke Cage.
Luke Cage.
That's not.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
And yeah, that moment where he turns her over in the bed, I did wonder. You know, 12-year-old me did what? What's going on, Mum? You know what I mean? Yeah.
I've mentioned this before on the show. I found that sequence totally just. I was like, why are we watching this?
Yeah.
It didn't seem to be shot with any kind of.
That was when that first happens. It's like, this is a grown-up show. Do you know what I mean? It was one of those.
Yeah.
That sort of Game of Thrones. Hold on, we haven't had any sexy bits in it for a bit. Quick, just show something sexy.
Yeah.
I just thought they could be handled with a little more artistry as opposed to.
Yeah. I think that scene was really interesting for me, because I'm not a big fan of sex scenes in things that aren't porn anyway, because I think they're almost entirely unnecessary. You can allude to people having sex without having to show it. But I think this scene was necessary in the sense of you needed to see this sense of like raw power that they had, and the attraction that they had together. But yeah, man, it was really, really weirdly shot. Yeah, it was just like, throw each other around and bonk, get in there.
I kind of got the sense it was to show that they both had sort of powers. And that's if you had super strength or were invulnerable, or, you know, you couldn't have your skin pierced. This is how you would enjoy it. I don't know whether
right. I think it's two characters that normally they live their lives probably skirting around how they interact with people because they might hurt them. And then they suddenly realise, actually, I can do whatever fuck I want.
A bit more gentle, during the sexy times. And they, you know, they could let
rip
a bit. Yeah.
I just thought it was just a bit too straight.
Yeah. There's a way of saying that and not showing it, I suppose. Yeah, definitely. But to me, I think Daredevil and certainly Luke Cage and stuff like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, they're no-brainers. You're gonna get a good audience. Jessica Jones, everyone was going, really? It's a weird choice. Yeah. You know, the comic got cancelled. The character was, you know, very much sort of in the background in a couple of issues, sort of thing. But, it was. I absolutely loved it. I watched it quicker than I watched any of the other ones. And I liked a lot of the other actresses and actors in it. Carrie-Anne Moss... just great to see her back as well, and I really like watching her. She's really interesting.
Yeah.
I just watched her in Humans as well, and she was really good in that as well. And right, here's the little quiz, because I hinted that I might give a quick quiz. The Gibster is interested in this. What other Marvel related product has Rachel Taylor, who plays Trish Walker, what has she been the co-star in? Anyone know?
No. Hang on. No.
Are you drinking coffee?
No, I'm just thinking. No, I'll give up.
Man-Thing. She's the female lead in Man-Thing.
That film.
Oh, okay.
Fuck off.
That film's brilliant. I'll tell you now.
No, it's not.
I watched it again yesterday, and it's like watching a trauma movie. It's that bad.
It's also
you know, but it's kind of good. A bad good, I think.
No, it's one of the comic book movies that I think is almost got absolutely nothing to do. It doesn't feel like a comic book movie in any way, shape, or form.
Well, they shout
might
a lot.
As well, watch Holmes Under the Hammer with a bit of moss, and that's probably more like.
It's a bit like the thing in that. Who's that purple bloke in that? I know he's purple, orange. The thing in that movie is they keep shouting people's names. It's like typical horror movie cliche, isn't it? Oh, what's happened to Steve Gerber? Has he died? They do that a lot, you know. So, but I watched it. It's trashy good. I like it. It is terrible, though. I will agree with you on that one. But, yeah, so anyway, she was in that. But just back to Jessica Jones, I have to say it was a brave, like a completely brave choice. I love the fact they're building up this family, as with Daredevil and Luke Cage, you know, and soon to come Iron Fist. But beyond that, you've also got characters like The Hand and Elektra and Punisher. And as I understand it, Shang-Chi's going to be in Iron nice. Fist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this sort of, could we live in a better time as a comic fan? It's just, or as a Marvel fan, it's, we just couldn't. Could we?
I still think Shang-Chi's going to be an antagonist.
Do you? Okay, right.
Yeah. It seems the perfect thing for him.
Yeah, he better not be a villain, otherwise I'll be demonstrating outside the Marvel offices.
Or maybe he'll be fighting and then realises, hold on, I'm on the wrong side here.
Classic Marvel style. Okay, so there you go, but, Jessica Jones is my...
Hating on, like, you know, the Marvel stuff when he got, like, the 10 episodes, and then to the, or maybe 15, whatever. But, like, stuff like The Flash, the last series, like, Flash was completely beaten by the bad guy. I think it was Zoom.
Yeah.
And then for, like, 6 or 7 episodes, Zoom doesn't show up and just lets The Flash kind of get his shit back together. And then you're like, oh, okay, well, what happened to this threat? The bad guy just fucked him over. And then leaves him alone for a quarter of the series get his stuff back together. I was just really meh.
Yeah, I mean, I watch some of the DC stuff, and I watch it all actually. But I have to say, Legends of Tomorrow is pretty trashy, pretty terrible.
We gave up on that.
It's like watching a really bad TV show that you watch because like people turn up, like the Justice Society of America. But I enjoy it because of the sort of rubbishness of it. I hate to say that, but that's what I do. Yeah,
you watch it. You watch a lot of stuff for that.
I do. Yeah.
Right, the results of this one. In fourth place with 9%, it was Lois and Clark.
Yeah.
No surprise there.
Even Dan didn't vote for it.
Yeah.
But it's still got 9% of the vote. And third place with 13% is The Tick.
Oh, that's shocking.
Okay.
That's because people haven't seen it, though. That's my argument.
Yeah.
Not enough people. If they'd have seen it, it'd have been higher.
I think that's a decent turnout for a series that not enough people have seen, and I'm one of them. So
this will be interesting then.
In second place with 27% is Jessica Jones.
Okay.
Which means that Daredevil comes out on top with 51% of the vote.
51. That's a big shout on it. Yeah.
So
it's just the rampant misogyny of our audience.
Yeah, that's because people are feminists. See what I mean? That's the reason.
That is the reason.
You're slowly working your way up the chart, Tony.
I know.
So that's two for two for Vince.
Yeah. So now for the third round.
Round 3.
Animation based on a comic book property.
So, animated series, films, etc., whatever. This is going to be an interesting one. Who wants to go first on this?
Did I go first again? Last time?
Oh, yeah, who went first last time?
Me.
Stace, do you want to go first?
Yeah.
Oh, go on then.
I
made a really weird choice because I had a feeling everybody would think I was going to pick some iteration of the Ninja Turtles. But instead I went with Teen Titans Go.
Okay.
And the reason I chose this is because I haven't seen Batman the Animated Series. No. I mean, that is true. But Teen Titans Go is possibly one of the weirdest things I've ever put in my eyes. It follows... Shut up. It follows Robin, Starfire, Cyborg, Beast Boy and Raven. It's adorably animated. They're very sort of cute versions. The voice actors are all amazing. But the thing I love about it is you literally never know what you're going to get because it's not like a standard, you know, fighting a different bad guy each week. There's like one episode in, I think it was last season, that was entirely Robin trying to educate the others on why it's important to get on the property ladder.
Yeah.
He these straight up crackers, and I absolutely love it. It's just absolute bananas, and I could watch Beast Boy and Cyborg interact with one another like all day, every day. They're so adorable together. I can't sell it in
Young Justice as well, if I remember. So it went from that real sort of serious sort of TV show to something that is
got a lot of people's backs up.
Yeah, and then it came allegedly out, and then it was actually really, really good.
Yeah, it's so good. There's another episode that's based on that video game that I'm blanking on the name of, but it's basically the one where you pretty much can't win because you're just travelling across America and getting dysentery and dying.
Oregon Trail.
That's the Oregon one. That's the one. There's a whole episode based around that, and it's bloody brilliant. I can't get enough of it. Every time I watch it, I'm just... You know sometimes when you laugh so hard that your face hurts and your stomach hurts? I get that a lot with Teen Titans Go. And I think that's a good sign of a TV show.
There's a great episode, I absolutely loved it, that they get accused of not being serious enough. So they have to be serious. And then suddenly it cuts to like a 90s style animation where they're all overly muscly. You've got like slightly hairy lips and chins. And everyone's got like the most, like the angst is going like rampant. And Raven talking about she can't contain the beast within, and there's all these like shots of them in silhouette against the moon, and it's really well done.
It's really good. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it's a crazy series. Rarely do they ever fight a supervillain.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I must watch more of this. I've seen a couple, but not enough, I think.
See, I've got the excuse of having a young son. And I was watching him here.
Oh, I have no excuse. I just love watching stupid things.
Yeah. In this case, none is needed. There's one episode where the pizza guy, if you deliver over 30 minutes, you get it for free. So Cyborg and Beast Boy try and make it as hazardous as possible, but he always makes it.
There is also an episode where they meet the Ninja Turtles, and that one's weird as well.
Yeah, that's
odd. Is it? Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's it. It's the same one because they're all about pizzas.
I need to watch more of this. Yeah,
is this on Netflix or anything, or Amazon Prime or anything?
I don't know, because I watch it on Cartoon Network, so but I don't know what order they show those in. I don't know if I've watched it in the correct order or if indeed I've seen all of it, but everything that I have
seen. Show that you don't necessarily need to
watch. You can jump in and jump out.
Speaking of jumping in, I'm going to jump in with my pick this time. Now
smooth.
Not really.
Now I was going to pick Tony's choice for this this category. That was my first thought, but then I thought back to some of like the animated movies and that I liked, and for me, DC, when it comes to the animated sort of films, straight to DC films, DC have been head and shoulders above that.
They kill.
I mean, obviously recently I think there's been some that are just not done very well, or they're just dull, or they're pointless. I was very much not a fan of The Killing Joke.
I've not seen that one. I saw The Dark Knight. I watched that again recently. It's a double, two films. I really like that, you know.
Yeah.
I've not seen the second one of that. I've only seen the first.
That's the one with Superman in the second one. Really done.
Yeah. But my choice for this was a Justice League Crisis on Two Earths.
It's one. Oh yeah, I like this. Yeah, very good.
It's one that probably maybe a lot of people might not have seen, and I don't have. I know it's kind of based on the comic series. Who worked, was it? Grant Morrison that worked on.
Yeah.
Crisis. Was it Crisis on Three Earths or something like that?
The original one.
Yeah.
What, the Marv Wolfman one? Is it Marv Wolfman?
No, not Crisis on Three Earths.
Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely. It's called Earth 2. JLA Earth 2.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So they pulled in a lot of that, and it is essentially the Justice League going up against an evil version of the Justice League from another. Yeah. One of the many worlds that DC has. Now, I had no, you know, I hadn't read DC for a long time. I didn't really have a footing on it. You don't need to know anything about the story going into it. It doesn't really tie into anything. It's just a great superhero team movie. Just everything. Yep. I mean, it even gets away with not having Kevin Conroy as the voice of Batman. And considering William Baldwin is the voice of Batman, and
he does all right.
Normally I'd scoff at that, but he does all right. He does all right. James Woods as Owlman is
this is great.
Oh,
is,
genius.
Yeah, fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. There's awesome, like, super fights. That's the only way to describe it, when the two Green Lanterns are going up against one another, Superman versus Ultraman. You know, it could just go on and on and on. But the script is tight. I think it was Dwayne McDuffie? Or was it Dwight?
Oh, was it him who wrote it, was it? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he wrote a few of them.
Yeah, no, he did loads, moved into a load of animation before he passed away, didn't he? And it was all good stuff, yeah.
Passed away. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. I rewatch it constantly. And it also, I mean, I've already talked about the Daredevil credit sequence. Crisis on Two Earths has, it might have my favourite theme tune and intro sequence of a film, like, just full stop. I just love the way it looks, and when the Justice League theme kicks in, it's just, you can't help but just think, this is amazing. I love it. You know, and you just feel your pulse racing. So fantastic. I actually don't have a proper copy on DVD. I think I might have to get it on Blu-ray.
Got it on DVD, and I think they've got the Spectre short with it as well, which is really good.
Yeah, that's really good as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Gary Cole is the voice of the Spectre in that.
Is he?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm a big fan of that actor.
Yeah, he's great, isn't he?
Yeah. So I was fully aware that some people out there might not have seen it, but if you have seen it, then you know how amazing it is. So thank you if you voted.
there's got to be space for a James Woods, Gary Cole fucking buddy cop series, isn't there? Yeah. Those two are just fucking maniacs.
Yeah. I can remember in the comic, basically, the Lex Luthor from the kind of the alternate Earth comes to our Earth and sort of says, "You got to come back with me and help sort it out." And when the JLA go over there, they can't set things right because they're the bad guys in that universe.
Yeah.
Where things flip, so they have to leave it as it is.
Because the Justice League yearly would do a crossover, wouldn't they, with another universe. So they did the Earth-X appeared a few times just in the regular run as well. So what Grant Morrison did there was kind of riffed on a sort of bit of a sort of Bronze Age sort of scenario, you know, that was always like an anniversary thing.
Isn't in the animated, Owlman's basically going to destroy all the universes, is that right?
Yeah, because he's fully aware of everything that's going on, you know, he's even playing his own team. Do you know what I mean? When he's sort of revealed some of the dialogue, you know, obviously he goes up against Batman as well.
The riffs on Watchmen in it as well are just really obvious, aren't they? You know, they just riff on the sort of the way that Watchmen played up to that sort of universe.
And like the Lex Luthor being the hero. But you're so conditioned to Lex Luthor not being a hero that you always think, when's the point? You know, when is he going to turn? But it is, you know, he's just a good guy. You know, it's that reality.
Yeah.
I love that, so, and I love this film. So there you go, that's my choice.
I always like that story of Lex Luthor being the good guy until Superman turned up and he just couldn't hack it. He wasn't the best. So he had to take him down a notch, and then that's where his sort of undoing came from.
Yeah.
I know he was a bit of a shit before then, but
a bit of a shit. Okay, who wants to go next, Dan or Tony?
Dan, you go, because I'm really interested to hear your one. Yeah.
Okay, this is probably going to get judging by the previous poll ratings, this one's is probably going to be really low because probably no one's heard of it. But it was this post Akira, and I was just getting everything I could, kind of manga, anime, trying to pick up and read it and see what I liked and didn't. It was kind of about the same time we got into Fist of the North Star, and I would happily have put that, but I put this because I don't think many people have heard of it. It's called Venus Wars.
You know how to win a poll, don't you, Dan?
Yeah. So this comic was published, I think it started like 1987 to 1990, and it was translated by Dark Horse in the early 90s, and essentially I just have to chance my arm going down the comic shop. If they had copies in, I might get some, and I never got a complete run of it. But like a little while later, the animated film came out on VHS. It was when manga were releasing. They did like a film a month, and this was like the third or fourth one that they released into it.
Right.
And picked it up, and it's fantastic. It's set, as you'd imagine, called Venus Wars, set on Venus in the years 2089. And a big kind of ice comet has smashed into the planet and basically made it habitable for humans to go on there. And there's two massive colonies, Ishtar and Aphrodia, and they're kind of back and forth, like with political gesturing. And then one day, Ishtar, the northern part, invades the southern part of Aphrodia, and it focuses on a group of kind of bikers who take part in this kind of biker derby where you're smashing people off.
Okay.
And the main character is called Hero, which at the time I was like, what the fuck? The main guy's called Hero. But it's a relatively common name, H-I-R-O.
Yeah.
And it's all about sort of him and his teammates and when the city comes under martial law and how they all deal with living under sort of being oppressed. And he kind of, initially you think it's kind of a bit of throwaway, but essentially all the characters go through different fates before them when they try and sort of stand up to their oppressors or kind of get rolled over by the machinery of war. And they kind of come to a consensus, we're going to take back our bike track. That's the one thing we're going to do. And that goes really badly wrong. And a couple of the group kind of get die, spoilers. And from there, they're kind of rescued by like a liberation force from their colony. And they start like a revolutionary army to kind of take it back. It's got some really kind of heavy themes. There's kind of, like I said, loss in war. There's a bit tragic that the essentially the main character goes on and loses a lot of the people around him, and by the end he's a kind of like a bit of a headshot teen. At the end he's a bit kind of fucked over by it all, got a bit of PTSD. One of the main things that really interesting in the story, you see from the kind of this kid biker kids who are teens and the other side, which is kind of like the governments, and you see the main general who's in charge of the invasion called General Donner, and the characters never know of each other's existence. But at the end of the film, it ends up like a kind of fight between this General Donner character, who's in this huge tank, and Hero, who's in this kind of like battle bike. And they're the two protagonists. I've never seen this in a story before where the two characters are representing two different ideologies going up against one another, but they've never had any interaction in the story up until that point. And it's really okay. Well done.
I must say, I really must watch this. I grabbed a load of the videos when they came out, because we really hadn't seen a lot of manga at that point. And I got a load of stuff. They put Guyver out and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Crying Freeman, I think.
Yeah.
They do as well.
It's like a big treasure trove of all this great shit that you just hadn't seen.
It was. Yeah.
And finding little gems sort of hidden amongst it, and this is one of them. I think this was on YouTube relatively recently, but they've taken it down. But if you look around, it'll be on streaming sites. It's really old, like 80s, so you should be able to.
But the animation's still badass, isn't it?
It's really good.
I watched Ninja Scroll the other day, and that was sort of part of the same sort of series of videos, wasn't it? And that was excellent as well.
I love
that. That was excellent.
So people should check out Venus Wars if you haven't heard of it, like I hadn't.
Yeah, I'm going to.
Tell
me, you don't misspell it and end up on the wrong site. The P in front.
Oh shit, I've got it now. Hang on. I've got the audio on. Yeah, okay.
Right, so Tony, what was your pick?
Mine was the no brainer, the easy option, I've got to tell you, Batman the Animated Series. I'm not a big fan of animation, actually. I don't really watch much.
Mm.
I don't know why, I just sort of don't really. A lot of my TV is consumed on a tablet on the train. So it's sort of, it's not something I really go to, but this sort of captured everyone's hearts and still is viewed very sort of fondly. It ran in the US from 92 to 95 at 85 episodes. But for me, it was the tone of the piece really that set it apart. It had that sort of cool retro look, but also a sort of little bit of a modern feel. It harked back to the Fleischer animation, the Superman Fleischer movies for me. It won 4 Emmys. It span out into stuff like Batman Mask of the Phantasm, and also it influences a lot of animation still to this day. The Superman series that followed it was really sort of influenced by it. It has some great voice actors. I'm not a great believer in voice actors. I don't think they work for their money. Do you know what I mean? I think they need to get a proper job. But
I always wanted to get into that. It's fucking money for a rope.
Isn't it? Yeah. especially when they appear. We're looking at me, I'm famous. But there you go. Let's deathmatch them. But Mark Hamill, great. Mark Hamill, you know, he came back from... I think he was living on the streets, wasn't he? He was just a sort of
hobo. Yeah. No one knew him.
No, never heard of him. He came back after Slipstream, they actually recorded a load with Tim Curry, but considered him to be too scary.
That'd have been brilliant.
Yeah, that's really strange, isn't it?
He went on to the Wild Thornberrys, as we all know.
Yeah.
wasn't he?
Yeah, kids and that.
Yeah. Al Pacino was approached to play Two-Face and turned it down, unsurprisingly, because he probably didn't pay enough. And you've already got to look at stuff like Harley Quinn. That's where she started.
Yeah.
As did Remy Montoya. You had Roddy McDowall, I'm a big fan of. He played the Mad Hatter. And anything with Ron Perlman in, I'm going to watch.
Yeah.
And he was, I think he was Bane, and I think he was Killer Croc. I think he had two roles in it. Talking again about why we love this stuff and, you know, how close they can get, because it's not always possible to get close to the source with these sort of programs. They did their best in it, and a lot of the stories were direct or adapted from actual genuine and existing comic stories. Dreams of Darkness, that came from Alan Grant's Batman The Last Arkham from Shadow of the Bat 1 to 4, and very obviously did. Even Robin's Reckoning, it came from a 1940s detective comic story with Robin in. Moon of the Wolf came from, obviously, the Len Wein and Neil Adams story. It's still generally ranked as sort of top in the top 10, isn't it? So you see, like, best animation ever. You see it somewhere there.
It's also the best Clayface. I absolutely adore Clayface in that series.
Yeah, and Mr. Freeze as well.
Yeah.
They really brought that stuff back, didn't they?
Yeah.
That's one thing, if you sort of said, like, what's Batman about? And it's like, watch the intro to this cartoon.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's exactly. it.
Now right you there. Understand Batman. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think because it had that postmodern thing. I think with a lot of cartoons, you know, you got that. It, not only is it postmodern, but it also appeals to kids and parents. A lot of sort of cartoon series that seemed to last, it did. Superman the Animated Series followed, which I didn't enjoy as much, but is still pretty good. But that was done rather than, I think Paul Dini wanted to do a Catwoman spin-off, which I think would have been good, but I don't suppose they thought, oh, this won't be for kids or kids. Well, you know, the sort of studio mentality that people have. It's still really watchable now. Writers included a lot of comic people, actually, and they returned and wrote quite a few episodes. So Elliot Maggin, who wrote a lot of Silver Age DC, Len Wein, who's obviously, you know, genius Hulk and Swamp Thing writer, Mike W. Barr, who we talked about a minute ago with The Crow, he wrote some. Denny O'Neill, who's just one of the best Batman writers ever, he wrote some. And obviously Bruce Timm as well, who we all know. You get some dark themes as well in it. It's a weird one, actually. There's some things that come up. There's a little bit of drug use that goes on it. There's quite a few sexual innuendos, which I presume come mostly from Catwoman and Harley Quinn, you know. There's a lot of sort of violence. I think Commissioner Gordon gets shot properly at one point, doesn't he? Which you didn't really see in a lot of sort of cartoons at the time. And then there's a little bit of sort of hints at parental abuse around a couple of the characters as well. And I think if I ever had to, you know, smash it down and say this is why it's the best, I would say probably Kevin Conroy.
He's great. He
gives the best Batman voice, really, you know, and he's really good.
A fantastic episode where there's like three kids and they're all talking about their experiences with Batman and what they think Batman's like. And there's one that tells you the Dark Knight of like the Frank Miller with the pool of mud fighting like the mutant gangs. And then there's one that harks back to like the 1960s comic, and they're in a big fight in the typewriter. And it's just so great.
It's really encapsulating what it is to read Batman through the ages, you know, from the sort of Silver Age mentalness of, you know, all the crazy stuff he did there through to the sort of, you know, Dark Knight and beyond, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, definitely.
There's one episode as well when there's a guy on the freeway and he cuts up a car and he looks and it's the Joker. And I can't remember how it plays out, but he's fucking shitting himself all day that the Joker's going
to... What a person to cut up on the motorway.
Fancy
hell.
There's little bits, as I watched it, there was like suddenly Nightwing's in it, and you think, oh yeah, they're introducing Nightwing now, and you know, different characters would come and go a bit from it, wouldn't they, you know? And I have to say, the Brave and the Bold cartoon, I think, is a worthy successor to it. That was a really great cartoon.
Really good.
And Justice League Unlimited was very good as well.
I think it's going to be obvious what the results of the poll are going to be, but shall I read them out anyway?
Yeah, go for it.
So in fourth place with 3% is Venus Wars.
Yeah.
As high as 3%.
Well done.
Yeah. Well done. In third place with 7% is Justice League Crisis on Two Earths. In second place with 11% is Teen Titans Go. So with 79% of the vote, Batman the Animated Series came out on top.
Bringing it home.
I should really watch that, shouldn't I?
Yeah, it's
really good.
Yeah. It is. Yeah, it is really, really good. It was just an easy win, wasn't it? That was why I didn't.
It was an easy win. Yeah, it's like choosing the Avengers. Fucking.
Well, our next category is going to be is going to be the feisty one. This is going to be the interesting one. So, yes, our fourth category. Let's roll.
Round four.
Dear God, this comic book movie is awful. I want to tear my eyes out with spoons and jump off a bridge.
So, worst comic book movie. Everyone's got an opinion about these.
We're such haters, aren't we?
Yeah, people love to hate. And to be honest, we've had three rounds of just showing love to so many great pieces of entertainment that we thought we'd have one where we're just like, this is bullshit.
I like it when you show me love.
Well, but we can't talk about that on an audio medium. That's a video show. Yes, so the worst comic book movie, which I realised in the poll, I spelt the word comic book movie. That was because I was too enthusiastic.
You're excited, weren't we?
I was too excited about this. So, we've got four exciting choices. I think I'll go first with this one. My choice for worst comic book movie is Batman and Robin. The George Clooney, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Joel Schumacher shit splat that I can't unsee.
I think I just referred to it as a shit storm. So we're both in agreement around that.
When it came to this, I was trying to think, what comic book movie is there something where I can't find anything redeeming? Like, there's certainly a lot of films out there that you may not like, but, you know, you could be like, oh, that character was quite good. Or that moment, they got it right in that moment. Batman and Robin has nothing. Absolute nothing. It came after Batman Forever. It was Joel Schumacher's second time at bat on the Batman franchise. And it seems to me like he did everything he wanted to do with Batman Forever on this. Like, any sort of Tim Burton influence was long gone. People have said in the responses, oh, it's a bit of cheesy fun. No.
There's no fun about it. No. Absolutely none. I tried to watch this movie when drunk with my sister because I thought, oh, this will be fun when we're drunk. And it sobered me up so much that by the end of it, I was like, oh, I hate you, movie. Yeah. I was so cross with it.
Whether it's the shots, the crotch shots and the bum shots of
bat nipples.
Bat nipples.
Where's Bruce Wayne got a Batman fucking credit card? Because secret identity much, mate, you prick.
Because he never leaves home without it.
I think one of the rationales was like, well, the old TV show was really good. I was like, well, hold on. Like, we've not, the two films that beforehand that were really successful.
Yeah.
Why are you going back to the influence?
I actually would rather watch it than I would watch Forever. I know that's a bit of but sacrilegious, but I actually find Forever really annoying. I think it's because I see it coming. I think everything Schumacher does in those two movies is just fucking obvious and pandering and just like fucking populist bullshit. And it just, I don't know. But I know you, me and you, Dan, Vince, we had a chat, didn't we, in the week about how much we like Clooney, and I'd like to see Clooney in a good Batman movie.
Yeah. You know? I agree.
But I'd like to see Clooney in a comic book movie, but like, certainly not in a role like that. Just something where, you know, probably more street level. You know, something a bit grittier. You know,
I'd like to see him at this age now, as old he is now in Dark Knight Returns. I think he'd be good in a movie of that. Yeah. You know, he's a bit grey now and he's a bit more frailer looking, isn't he? You know.
And look, this film, Batman and Robin, it did so much harm. Do you know what I mean? Yes, you can say it. If we didn't have Batman and Robin, we wouldn't have a Batman Begins. Do you know what I mean? There had to be something that was a palate cleanser. Because I don't know.
I was just pissed off they changed Batman again. I thought, why are you doing it again? Yeah. Just restart, like, oh.
Yeah.
You know.
And Batgirl in it.
She's brilliant.
Do we have to talk about.
We have to. No. I've got nothing to say.
I think there is one good thing about the film.
What?
Right.
The Mr. Freeze puns.
Yeah. The only redeeming
Everybody
thing.
Everybody chill.
Yeah.
I can't watch him. I just find him so dislikable in this.
Yeah, he's not good, Arnie.
It's just not the epitome of what Mr. Freeze is, you know.
Yeah.
And Uma Thurman's an absolutely terrible Poison Ivy. Oh,
yeah, it's awful.
This just is the one where so scenery chill.
We got Bane in this as well, didn't we?
It's
all coming back now.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, you're right, we didn't.
Why did I bring it up? Because now I've got to think about it.
But you remember when it came out, there was all this drama about. I remember there was in the papers, like, people kept stealing the posters because it was the, kind of the first movie that did the themed series of posters. So each character got their own poster and they were on bus stops and stuff like that. And people kept stealing them. And they were sort of saying, oh, you know, Alicia Silverstone is going to be brilliant because they keep stealing her poster. You know, really? I got a reason they keep stealing it, and it's nothing to do with this movie.
Yeah.
You know wasn't I mean? It just basically like, oh, I found out you're Batman now. Now I'm going to be Batgirl. And it's like, well, why? You've got no skills to translate. Yeah. You're like a secondary school kid. Well,
Robin is such a dislikable character he's just a twat. There's that scene where everything is in, it's sort of like neon, isn't it? It's, you know, those,
yeah, that neon thing he kept doing, that Schumacher, that winds me up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
it's played for jokes. That's what gets me. You know. They got away with that with the TV series, but a time and a place, but it's just sort of, it's gone from Batman and, you know, Batman Returns, which were dark and, you know, they had little moments in them, but, you know, this is just completely a joke.
Yeah. And it was one of those things where, as a comic book fan, you really want the medium to be taken seriously because you're reading, like, you know, the Frank Miller Batman comics, you know, everything that was happening at that time. And then you get stuff like this, which makes the public think, oh, it's just silly, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
Well, I do remember reading something about the commentary track in the Batman and Robin DVDs, essentially Joel Schumacher, an hour and a half long apology.
I think we got to the point where actors had decided it's their turn to do a Batman movie.
Do you know
what I mean? Because of the Joker in the first one was such a great villain, you know, and so well played, everyone thought, oh no, I'm going to do one now. Right, who's the big name for the next movie? Let's get who, Tommy Lee Jones, and who was the
Jim Carrey was the
Jim Carrey. Yeah. Jim Carrey, I just fucking hell, I just want to punch him in the face during the movie. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, you know, a lot of people lay all of the blame on Joel Schumacher and like to like riff on him, but he's made some great films. Do you know what I mean? He's made some films that I really like. It's just that this one, there's nothing.
It just stinks of too much cocaine to me. There was obviously quite a lot of powder flying around Hollywood at the time.
And there fucking was Bob Finger, they asked him, said like, what do they think of the Michael Keaton as Val Kilmer. And he said, oh, that's just the perfect casting. It's like, yeah, you don't know nothing.
Yeah.
That's just the perfect illustration. You no, fuck all.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen it, it's been a while now, so there may be a lot of people that haven't seen this film. Do not
It wasn't
watch
Bob
it.
Finger. It fucking, what's the guy who claims to have made Batman?
Bob Kane.
Bob Kane, yeah. That's solely the name of Bob Finger. Bob Kane.
Bill Finger, yeah.
Bill Finger, yeah.
Yeah, it's awful. Don't watch it. It will tarnish your life.
Yeah, shit fest.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I have judged people that say that it is cheesy entertainment. I just want to let you know if you said it.
Your cheesy entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, your cheese. Anyway, so I've got that off my chest. What does the group want to discuss next?
Shall I go next?
Yeah, go for it.
Go on.
Okay. Well, I'm going with, and I think this suffers from being another thing where not many people saw this. But I'm going with Fantastic Four from 2015.
Yeah.
Now, I find this more annoying than hate, I've got to tell you. Like most of these things, I paid to go and see this at the cinema. I even quite enjoy the Roger Corman movie, if anyone's seen that. Has anyone seen that?
God, no, I know about it.
The unreleased one, the one they made just to keep the...
The license,
yeah. On that subject, did you know that Warren Beatty made a Dick Tracy hour-long movie that's never been released so he could keep the license? Do you know that?
Didn't know that.
Really?
Yeah, I'd like to see that. Yeah, because he's such a big fan of it.
I didn't mind Dick Tracy.
Yeah.
I
thought that was a writer film.
Yeah.
Don't hate me.
No, I don't.
No, I don't hate you.
Yeah. And I've got absolutely no problem with the casting of a black Johnny Storm, which everyone seemed to fucking go mental over. I don't... Couldn't give a flying fuck, actually. I think the adopted brother and sister thing works really well, and the fact they're brother and sister, I believe it in the film. That's one of the few things I believe in the film, to be fair. Yeah.
You just say they're adopted, that's the end of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On we go.
It doesn't matter. If the character's right, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah. And I actually think he's probably the better casting, because he's got that sort of Johnny Storm attitude thing going on.
Mm.
They really don't get the the characters right. Jamie Bell as Ben Grimm. I don't think they could possibly choose a worst actor.
Does he do any dancing?
No, sadly. Yeah. He's. I think maybe my mum would have made a more convincing, Ben Grimm than her. And to be fair, she could probably have him in a fight. No, my mum's quite vicious, so to be fair. And he's about a foot shorter than the bloke who plays Reed Richards.
I've just got to say, I do. Reed Richards is supposed to be a great guy, likable. Obviously, he's quirky, but the Fantastic Four have to be a likable team. And the bloke that they chose for Reed Richards is so deeply unlikable. The only thing I've liked him in was in Whiplash, and he plays an arsehole in that. So it was easy.
I've forgotten his name again.
Miles Teller.
Yeah.
It fucked up his career. He was supposed to go on to do a film afterwards, quite a big one, and the people behind it said no, we're not.
Yeah,
he got. I think it was Ryan Gosling got the role. He went, and it was. I can't remember the name of the film, but it did well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll go on to my main problem with it, but it's like a cliched high school drama for at least 45 minutes, where he goes to sort of high school for geniuses. It's literally, I'm watching, thinking this just has fuck all to do with the Fantastic Four. It's basically a lot of high school drama about a lab experiment, and nobody in it is likable. The guy who plays Victor Von Doom. Has any of you seen this film?
No,
I've not seen this one.
I tried to, but I fell asleep.
Right, which is probably evident of why it's so bad. But yeah, Toby Kebbell, who plays Victor Von Doom, is like this sort of. He's just like a slacker. He's just sort of this bloke who lives in a flat and plays computer games. No, nothing to do. I quite like Toby Kebbell as an actor. He was in Black Mirror, and I really liked him in that. And I thought it was really good. But this is just fucking awful.
They said, like, when it came out, like, Victor Von Doom's like a blogger. And I'm like, what? What?
Yeah, like, he looks like.
Understanding.
He looks like Ragman. His costume is exactly like Ragman. And they give him a mask that the mouth doesn't move. So he looks like a shit Auton from Doctor Who from the 1970s. In Greek. Kate Mara, she's okay. She didn't really say much. She sort of does a bit of eye acting, which she's quite good at. Josh Trank.
She had to come back and reshoot things and wear a wig, didn't she? Because she had.
Yeah, a really bad wig.
It is a bad wig. And her hair goes from being brown at one point to being blonde in a really bad wig. It looks like straw at one point from behind. Yeah. And weirdly, she has to hold her breath whilst using her powers. Who decided that happened? Anyway, but Josh Trank, he directed Chronicle, so you could see why they picked it up. I actually didn't mind Chronicle.
I thought it was okay.
As a sort of fan footage movie. Yeah, it's not too bad. Josh Trank's not really done much since. He's gone on. I think he's directed a couple of episodes of Arrested Development, which is meant to be good. I've not seen it.
This came after Arrested Development on Netflix, I think, didn't it? Because Josh.
But didn't they remake of it Arrested Development since?
Because this, I know, he had like a sort of like an online meltdown. You know, when this came out, everything was cutting off, and you just witnessed this director just. I don't know whether he was throwing his toys out the pram. It's online journalism, that's so happened. You can't tell.
I think he went onto Twitter like days before it was announced to be in cinemas, and he said, "It's nothing to do with me. This film."
I know there was loads of reshoots and all sorts of re-edits. I know reshoots happen in movies, but you can't tell. And the only reason we know they're happening because everyone goes on Twitter and says they're happening, but like Superman 2 was subject to a lot of reshoots, and I didn't know as a kid. I until enjoyed it.
Reshoots essentially mean nothing a lot of the time, don't it? Because they do.
Yeah, they
every
do.
Film.
Mm. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And I don't know whether to put his feet, Josh Trank, but the script I think is pretty fucking awful. It's incredibly slow. It's shot, and it's shot completely in sort of grey and blue tones, so it's very drab to look at it, put it that way. When you've got, such bright sort of starship travelling, sort of scientists like the Fantastic Four, it should be bright. And I'm not a hater of the first two movies, the Chris Evans ones. I actually quite like the Surfer one.
Me too.
Yeah, and my son loves the Surfer one. It's one of his favourite films growing up. We saw that at cinema twice, because he liked it so much. And they should be in space and stuff. But the last, probably the middle section and much of the last act seemed to happen in the Stargate control room. That seems basically the whole set. And Frank, Storm, the Storm dad, the guy who plays their dad, is this sort of scientist, and he appears and just randomly, literally out of nowhere, he just says, "This could explain the evolution of our species." I'm like, "Why the fuck did you just say that? It's got nothing to do with anything."
Just no.
Yeah.
What the fuck's that in it for?
Yeah. At one point, someone says, I'm not looking to be a tool," and I thought, "That's too easy. I can't fucking think about that because you." Do you know what I mean?
It also has an awful, from a design perspective, it has an awful logo for the film.
Yeah, it does.
It looks like Fan Four Stick. That's essentially what it looks like.
That's what it does. Call it Fan Four Stick.
And it doesn't. Nothing really happens. They sort of muck about, get their powers in this sort of transporter accident. That's essentially, you know, a 10-minute part of a Star Trek episode, and. And then they literally, these sort of three teenagers, Victor Von Doom, Reed Richards, and Johnny Storm, get a bit drunk on a bottle of beer that is about the size of a thimble and decide that they're going to use the machine to beam themselves over somewhere. That's what happens. That's how they get their powers. Yeah. You know, it's like the least dramatic approach to, you know, this ever.
This film can fuck off.
Yeah. There's,
yeah, I've got no interest in...
Suddenly then it goes 1 year later. They suddenly just go 1 year later. They just say, "Oh, fuck it." I mean, the thing is being used as a sort of tool of the government. He's being used in sort of black ops operations. And there is one cool scene, I'll give it this, which is where there's, it's like a found footage scene of the thing taking apart a tank in like Russia or somewhere, you know, and he sort of takes a tank apart and throws it. And I thought, you know, that's where they needed to go with this, you know.
Yeah.
It's the worst for me, though, 100% the worst reason that I don't like this very much is because... it is. There's no interplay between the characters. Mm-hmm. The Fantastic Four lives on the fact that Johnny Storm takes a piss out of Ben, you know, and Reed loves Sue, and Johnny's the sort of the wayward brother, and you know, all the little interactions that these characters have, and there's just none of it in it. It's just like horrible. Victor Von Doom looks like a hobo with like a hoodie on, and his powers are like the powers from Scanners. Who decided that Victor Von Doom just went around making people's heads explode? It's just weird.
Yeah.
I've got the DVD. I bought. Finally gave in because I knew we were doing the show. And I bought it. I know. It cost me £2.99.
You can't get that back.
I know. It's got... it's weirdly... I've just looked at it and it's got a sticker. You know, 12 certificate. It's got a sticker. And it's over the top of something that says 13 plus. So I don't even know why that is. I don't understand that.
Trying to get more people to watch it.
Maybe, yeah. Self-evidently, there's no special features in it. There's no, you know, commentary or anything like that. It's just not the Fantastic Four, and that's the reason it's not my favourite. There you go. That's
there
my
you
one.
Go. There you go.
It's, all right, if I follow on from Tony, because mine hooks perfectly.
Go on.
It's X-Men Origins Wolverine.
And do not agree.
Really?
I actually love this movie.
Okay. I'll get the good out of the way first. The intro sequence where it's got Wolverine and Sabretooth, huge jacked man, and Liv Schreiber. So basically, they fight in every single war America has ever been involved in. And it's fantastic. It's really well done. And when I saw that, I was like, this movie is got it right. It's fucking awesome. And they take a lot of stuff in the Origins comic book, but essentially it just falls to pieces after that.
Mm.
And I've done a fair bit of reading and watching about this week. And there's a Fox CEO called Tom Rothman. And he was involved with the Fantastic Four film with Trank.
Oh, okay.
Essentially, he's got a record of micromanaging products, especially sort of the superhero stuff, and fucking it up. And I've got a few little his best hits here. He cancelled Firefly.
Right.
He mandated Aliens versus Predator to be a 13. And to be set on Earth.
Oh, he can fuck off. Do you know what? You don't even need to say the rest of the fuck. Right,
he demanded that Daredevil had more CGI sequences in it because he wanted it to be like Spider-Man and have more CGI sequences. So the stuff like, you know, when Daredevil's flying down the side of the building.
Yeah.
It's just on his whim, like, put that in there because Spider-Man does that. He made Galactus in the second Fantastic Four to be a cloud because he didn't think audiences would like the giant Galactus person. And he did ultimately green light the Fantastic Four film with Trank. So you can see he's got a real He's got a track record of being an ass.
He's a top bloke. Oh,
top decisions. So one of the things he did on this film, the director was trying to take the film in a real grim and gritty direction. And one weekend, director's away. They're not shooting over that weekend. So Tom Rothman hires a team to go in and redecorate the sets, brighter colours.
No, so
you're true. And the director comes back Monday morning, and it's like suddenly these kind of really kind of dark, grim sets all have been painted to be bright and sunshiny. Yeah, it's just crazy. Absolutely crazy. So he was also made some of the decisions about Deadpool, which Ryan Reynolds does a great setup for Deadpool in the first bit of the film.
Yeah,
he does.
And he's making all the quips, and it's like, this is Deadpool. And because he's got that one bit where he's kind of like, he's joking around, and there's a bit when like murder comes up, and he's just absolutely cold and down for it straight away. And there's a real flip of the character that's really well done. You think, yeah, I can see this character becoming Deadpool. And then later on in the film, he turns up with his mouth stitched up, like bald, with like these great big swords out of his arms and teleporting over everywhere. And you're like, what the fuck is this?
See, no, I didn't mind that.
What?
And I know a lot of people will yell at me about this because they were like, didn't you just say you were a Deadpool fan, you massive twat? But here's the thing, right? Deadpool used to have a teleporter back in his 90s thing. It wasn't something he could do as a power, but I didn't mind that he could teleport because it used to be a thing. I didn't mind the swords coming out of his arms because he does fight with katana anyway, so it's not that much different. The only thing I thought was shit was the fact you never sew up Deadpool's mouth.
No.
Get out of town.
No, it's the point of him, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But that scene earlier in the movie when he comes out of the lift and he's all like twirling sword badass.
Yeah, that's fine. That's great.
Oh, so good. So good.
They kind of make weird choices in the film, like when Wolverine pops out his adamantium claws for the first time. They're CGI.
Oh, they look terrible.
Oh, they're awful. Yeah.
You've even got the props from the previous films you've done. Why can't just use one of them? You've got three knives in each hand. What's the problem? And it's another one of the films, like, there's a dude, like, he's virtually invulnerable, can regenerate any wound. And he's just like a murder machine. There's no blood. There's just zero in the film. It's just bonkers. Yeah.
I'll tell you what the bit I did like. I liked the Gambit scene. I quite liked that one.
That's not too bad.
Taylor Fisher's Gambit. I thought it was adorable.
Yeah, and who's the guy who plays Sabretooth? Liv Schreiber.
He's really good.
I really like that actor.
He's a great actor, but he's just given a few bad lines, isn't he?
Yeah.
But he'd make a good... If they ever brought back Sabretooth, I wouldn't mind seeing him do it. I think he's
that was fine.
Good if it was well-written, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, generally I find the film's got some awful dialogue and stuff in it. But the worst bit for me, when I remember watching it, it was like someone just snapping my fingers and bringing me straight out of the film. At the end of the film, Wolverine's gone through all this, and then Stryker comes up to him and he points a gun at him and says, right, Wolverine, I've got an adamantium bullet in this, and if I shoot you with it, you're going to forget everything about this.
Right.
And he shoots Wolverine in the head, and then Wolverine gets amnesia for all those events. It's like, you've become an expert in something that no one's ever done before.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, in general terms, I remember when they cast Hugh Jackman, I remember thinking, I mean, an old school sort of Burn X-Men fan, I remember thinking, he's too tall, you know, like, Wolverine's always been the underdog, he's always like the sort of joke, you know, there's no chance he'll ever get off with Jean Grey, because he's like, you know, a midget and hairy and horrible, and then they cast him, but I have to say, I have warmed to him,
yeah,
and
definitely.
I do like the geezer now, and I think he's been brilliant, even that one scene, no spoilers, in the most recent X-Men movie, I love that scene, I just think that works so well, you know. And I know the new Logan movie, I just got such high hopes for it.
Yeah. That looks good because it looks like you don't have to watch anything else. That looks like a standalone. It looks like a film. Does that make sense?
I feel like if they've got the balls to do what they did with Deadpool and they decide to kind of do the same with Logan and give him the right treatment, it could be really good. But with Fox, I won't hold my breath.
Yeah, I know. But when did the first X-Men come up? It's like 2001, was it? Something like that? Yeah, that's 16, 15 years of movies, you know.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
If it wasn't that, we wouldn't have a lot of comic book movies now. So you can't knock it. But
one of the things that fucked me off about that last end as well, like, because there was that big fallout and Singer went to do Man of Steel over X-Men 3.
Yeah.
It's like, right, we're going to kill off Cyclops in a real bitch move.
I hate last end.
Just to kind of, like, stick it to them. and I was just, oh no, what have you done this?
Yeah. Juggernaut, bitch.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Awful.
X-Men.
I mean, I love the X-Men. I absolutely love it. I read virtually every X-Men comic that comes out, and I've got an undiluted run of Uncanny and stuff, and it's just like my favourite thing. And I have absolutely huge high hopes for every movie that comes out. Some of them aren't great. I'll agree with you.
X-Men 2 is fantastic. It's one of the best.
Yeah, First Class is great. I really like First
Class. Yeah, First Class
good. Yeah. The second Wolverine movie, there's moments in it that are just pure Frank Miller that just like break my heart. They're that good.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Right up until the robot at the end.
Yes.
Yeah, like, you've got me on board here.
Yeah.
So how the fuck do we finish this film? Just have a massive great big robot?
Normally that'd be fantastic, but
yeah.
Right, let's move on to Stacey's choice. Take it away, Stacey.
I feel like I picked an easy target for this one. I was really close to picking Elektra because, good heavens, that movie was awful.
Oh, God, yeah.
But I don't really know enough about Elektra in the comics to really sort of pick at that one. So I chose Batman versus Superman. And the reason I chose this movie is that they threw a lot of shit at the wall and none of it made any sense when stuck together. It felt to me like they were trying to do a Superman sequel, a Justice League prequel, a bit of a Batman origin movie, also a bit of a Wonder Woman situation. It's like they didn't know what they were trying to achieve, so they just lumped a load of stuff together and went, that'll do. And then they had possibly the world's worst Lex Luthor that's ever been committed.
I 100% agree with you on that. I cannot stand him on screen. Yeah. He does my Sweden.
I tried to rewatch this movie because it's just come on to like Sky Movies recently. I thought I'll try and rewatch it. Maybe I just wasn't in the right mood, because to be fair, when I went to see it at the cinema, I was a little bit drunk. So I thought,
I'm noticing a theme here.
Yeah. I do like to drink, guys. It's really fun. So I thought, I'll try and watch it again. And the instant he walked on, I was like, oh, I wish you were dead. I thought, why is it so... And it would really help if the movie wasn't so nonsensical. Like, I'm going to go a bit spoilerific here, but I feel like it's been out a year, so maybe that's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
There's like a pivotal scene in this movie where Lex Luthor's like, hey, Superman, I've got your mom. You've got to kill Batman, like, in an hour, or I'll kill her. And there are several things Superman could do here. The first is he could just listen out for where his mom is, because he's got super fucking hearing, and find her and rescue her and then punch Lex Luthor in the face. Or he could go to Batman and say, Lex Luthor has my mom. He wants me to kill you. Let's team up and do that instead. Or he can do what he actually did, which was go to Batman, try to explain in the absolute worst way possible by being like, I don't want to fight you. I don't want to fight you, though. But I don't want to fight you. And then have a big fucking fight. And then, there's the kryptonite spear and you can throw it. You can throw it. That's what spears are made for. Oh, it's making me angry. It's making me so angry. So bad. Get Wonder Woman to throw it. If that thing makes you sick. Oh. Everything about this movie is fucking shit.
Like, but you know that thing I said earlier about broken glass. Gal Gadot, Jesus Christ!
Like,
I actually really like her as Wonder Woman. I think she's really good.
Me too.
This is my thought on Batman vs Superman. I don't like it. I think it's an easy go-to for a lot of hate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are some redeeming things about it.
But
they highlight the problems. If one of the best things about your Batman versus Superman film is a Wonder Woman, you really need to address.
I don't know about that. I like Affleck. I'll go on record and say I like him as Batman. Yeah, the bit where he runs into the building when everyone else is running out, and I think, right, he's got it. He's got it for me. And his scenes in Suicide Squad,
when he's murdering people left, right, and centre.
Yeah, fuck that. I like the fact that Batman would murder someone. I actually genuinely
really,
like, but yeah, definitely. Well, he started off that way, didn't he? But I actually like the scenes he's in Suicide Squad. I think he's the best scenes in Suicide Squad as well. Like him in that.
I've not seen this. You kind of warned me off it, Vince, because you said, "Did you like Man of Steel?" And I went, "I fucking hated it." And you went, "Well, don't watch this then, because you'll fucking hate it." And I was like, okay.
I am one of very few people who actually quite enjoyed Man of Steel.
I'm the other one. I am the other one.
Yeah, oh, good. The problem with Batman vs. Superman is Superman doesn't get to be Superman in it.
Yeah.
Like, there are no scenes in which he's being Superman or enjoying being Superman.
Yeah. Yes, we need that Christopher Reeve element, don't we? We need him to be that guy.
A little bit of hope, a little bit of joy.
Seems to me like he gets fucked over because they like Batman too much. The makers of the film like Batman.
I think you might be right, mate. I think that's definitely what's happening. It's clearly, it's easier to make a film about Batman because you can add that darkness. And, you know, Superman doesn't quite fit into it, does he?
No, it doesn't.
You know?
That house style of dark.
Yeah.
Because it kind of, the end of Man of Steel, like, when the Christopher Reeves, and it's like, oh, who are you? And he's like, I'm a friend, and smiles, and then kind of flies off. And you think, yeah, everything's going to be right. And in that, he destroys a military drone and says, oh, I'm going to do what the fuck I like. And you're like, oh, okay. How comforting.
I think...
Sorry, go on.
No, you carry on, Steve.
Well, there's also a lot of problems with Batman vs. Superman in terms of the timeline of the movie, because they seem to be acting like Batman's been knocking around for many years and he's potentially lost a Robin. There was a bit of a hint there that there was a Robin suit and stuff. So he's been knocking around for, we're going to have to guess, at least 5, maybe 10 years. But Clark Kent, who is both Superman and a fucking journalist, doesn't seem to know about the Bat of Gotham, like, at all.
Plus... Gotham is just over the fucking river.
It's next door.
What the fuck? That is ridiculous.
So the big problem is Doomsday as well, because you can't have, like, the thing about Doomsday in the comic, because I actually really like the Death of Superman story.
Oh, I love it. Absolutely love it. Yeah, really good.
But the thing about Doomsday in the book is that they've thrown literally every superhero they can at it, and nothing is stopping this thing. Like, it's monster, and it's going to take everything, you know, everyone has to get this thing down and to stay down. But in this movie, Wonder Woman is straight up holding her own with it for quite a long time, whilst the other two fanny around with, like, Lois and, I don't know. Batman just seems to be grappling, hooking everywhere, like, whoop, shit, something looks scary, and just, like, zooming away from it. Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, there's no feasible reason why Superman has to do anything that he does at the end of this movie.
Yeah, I'd say Wonder Woman makes them both look like a pair of pussies, doesn't she?
Oh, absolutely.
I've got to tell you. Yeah, yeah.
I'm very excited for the Wonder Woman movie because I did come out of that movie just very excited for Wonder Woman instead.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a shame, really, because I really wanted to like this film, because I knew a lot of people, like, critically it got quite panned. And so when I went in, I thought, oh, I want to be that awkward person who likes the thing that everyone else hates. Like, ah, see? So, yeah. But no,
this was the beginning of the end for film reviewers for me. I don't read film reviews anymore. I think it's a subjective medium, isn't it? And there are bits of it that I really enjoyed watching that film. And then it's either good or bad in everyone's eyes these days, isn't it? You know, like, we'll sit here and we'll talk about, I like this bit, but this bit wasn't very good. You know, but film reviewers seem to just tank or love a film, you know?
Yeah.
I did enjoy Alfred. I thought Alfred was quite fun.
And I will say, if you're gonna watch a version of this, watch the extended edition, because it's seemingly that's where the storyline was.
Yeah, that's where a lot of stuff that makes more sense is. I've read up about this, because I was like, there's a scene with Lex Luthor at the end that I was like, what the fuck? Which apparently gets explained. Yeah.
Wasn't there
everything with Lois Lane, like her being a journalist and stuff, makes sense.
There's such a disservice to her in this movie, because literally all she does is exist to be saved by Superman. And that makes me really cross, because she's one of, like, you know, two women in this film.
Yeah. Are we all okay?
How do we feel? That guy who played Lex Luthor, wasn't he originally going to be the Riddler? And then they changed it around.
Oh, was he? Okay. I actually like him in a few things. Yeah. He's in a few things. I like him in, but
he's great in Zombieland. But it's like he's in a different movie to everyone else. Everyone else is in this dark and gritty sort of drama, and he's in this, like, nonsensical, almost like 60s Batman style.
I think he got off the back of that. What's that one where he plays a magician and he's the cleverest person in the room?
Oh, Now You See Me.
No, I think I get the feeling he got it off the back of that, to me.
Yeah.
Because he's like, this clever, sort of smart talking character in that, and he's just dislikable in that. I don't think they're very good films.
But also, when I learned that Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad was going to be Lex Luthor for a long time.
Yeah.
And then then they didn't. They cut him out and put the other guy in, Jesse Eisenberg in.
That was
you know
a poor
then
choice.
You're in trouble.
Yeah. That's almost as bad as Jamie Bell in the Fantastic Four. Yeah. It's just it's going down that level of why the fuck did you do that?
Yeah.
Does anyone else think the makers of Now You See Me, Mr. Trick Boy, not calling the second movie Now You Don't?
Yeah. Because I fucking haven't seen it either.
Well, in terms of the results of this one, this was the closest run poll.
Equal hatred.
Yeah, it's easy. Everyone loves to hate, don't they, really? But in fourth place with 16% is The Fantastic Four, which, as we said, it probably suffers because no one fucking saw it.
Yeah.
In third place with 21% is X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Fair enough.
In second place with 29%. Oh, wait for it. Dramatic pause. It's Batman and Robin. With 34%.
Wow.
Batman versus Superman was the worst comic book.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because all our polls are basically like the most recent thing has been hitting it. Interesting. Well, not true, actually.
Yeah, I suppose animated series. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but I... Like you say, Stace, that because it was so widespread and it was so in the zeitgeist, you couldn't escape it. I think Batman versus Superman, I always knew that was going to come out on top, I think. Because when people were upset about it, they were really upset.
I think the problem was that I expected a lot more from it as well. Because, technically, I think Suicide Squad's probably a worse movie. But I expected nothing from that movie. So when I went to see it, I was like, oh, well, that's about what I thought. Whereas with Batman vs. Superman, I was like, oh, I get to see Stoops and Bats and Wonder Woman. And it's going to be, it's terrible.
Yeah. I'm going to be interested to see what the Batman movie's like. Because I've got a lot of faith in... Affleck as a director as well.
Brilliant director.
I actually think Lego Batman's going to end up being my favourite Batman movie.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be fantastic.
It's so good.
Lego Batman in the Lego film was just absolutely spot on.
Wonderful.
Just so well
his
done.
Song about his dead parents had me creasing.
Well, I've not seen these.
Very good.
Should check out the Lego movie. It's really good.
Oh, okay.
I was laughing all the way through it, and Batman just... Yeah. Perfect. Self-obsessed narcissist.
Okay.
I knew this episode was going to be. As soon as you start talking about films, we could just be here all night, couldn't we? Really? And so much so that we don't have time for the bonus round that we were going to do.
We'll leave that for another time.
We could literally just name them, but that wouldn't be that interesting.
No. Let's come back and do that because I've got. Yeah.
I'd like to talk about the one I've picked, but we'll have Stacey back.
Save it.
And have a big group discussion about it.
Yay.
So there you go, folks. I can't believe we ended on the downer.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World was good though, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh, I really like that. Yeah.
That's got some great moments.
Yeah.
Such a good film.
Overall, I'm not a massive fan, but
the Vegan Police, amazing.
I walked out of that movie.
Really?
What? Yeah.
Not a fan.
Yeah, just found it a bit boring.
Oh, shut your mouth.
Oh, dear. Look, let's be all friends again. Does anyone have any shout-outs, Tony?
Yeah, I've got a couple. Firstly, does anyone read Batgirl? Anyone?
Yes.
Right, have you got Batgirl number 7 anywhere near you, Stacey?
I've got it, but I haven't read it yet.
Okay. Well, I'm in it. I'd like to point it out.
Ooh.
I'm a background person, as is Alex Martin, the Mighty Lamming, and Matt Harrower. So, see if you can spot me, although we've never met Stacey, so that'd be difficult.
No one likes to show off.
Yeah, it's drawn by Chris Wildgoose, our friend. And so we are absolutely chuffed to see him on a DC book now. It's just... he's such a good egg, and don't tell him I told him he said that. I'm over the moon to see him on it. And I was in the shop in Orbital the other day, and it's getting a lot of buzz, actually, a real, real lot of buzz. And he's drawn the cover on this one. I think he's done a few covers. I may have cheekily seen a recent cover that he's just submitted to DC. But, all just brilliant. His facial acting is absolutely superb in this issue. Really good. Apart from me, I look really grumpy. The other shout I'd like to give is to the 2008 exhibition Future Shock, which is at the Cartoon Museum, which I was lucky enough to go to the private view for it this week, and it is absolutely brilliant, really good. If you're a fan of 2008 at all, go along. There's the artwork over every great name from 2008 you can possibly think of. So you've got Carlos Esquire's Dread and Strontium Dog. You've got Brian Bolland on Dread. Mike McMahon's Slain pages are there, just like the holy grail of all 2008 pages. You've got Dave Gibbons, Dan Dare and ABC Warriors stuff, and you got Kevin O'Neill on Nemesis. Just beautiful, beautiful stuff. If you head to the Cartoon Museum at 35 Little Russell Street, London, it's near the British Museum, or go to cartoonmuseum.org. It's £7, concessions are £5, and under 18s going for free. Great stuff, really good.
Awesome.
There you go.
And if you're in Cheltenham this weekend on February the 4th, it's the True Believers Comic Festival. And we're going to be there. Well, Dan can't make it, so we'll just have a cardboard cutout of Dan for people to pose with. We should really get one of those.
We should do. Get two, because I'd like one.
One for the bank.
Oh, I dread to think.
Guitar burglars.
Oh, dear. Imagine that when you come back from work. It's just staring at you.
3D printing.
Yeah, we're going to be there. Lots of great comic guests, small press and artists and the like. It's going to be a great day. We also have a panel about making comics, which is going to sign off the day quite nicely. Tony's, he would have travelled back from New York.
On an overnight flight. Yeah, I'll be getting off a plane at 7 o'clock in the morning, so I'll be off my tits.
He's going to be mental, so it's going to be interesting. I'm going to be wrangling him.
Are you going
to
this state?
No, sadly.
Oh.
I'm very skinned, so I don't get to really travel to conventions. I do like one a year.
Are you doing Leamington at all, or?
No, I'm doing Thought Bubble.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that'll probably be it, really, unless anything happens around Birmingham that I can slink to.
Right, okay.
Mm. Well, if we can't make it a Thought Bubble, we might have you as another roving reporter.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, there you go.
I do like roving.
Oh my word. Yeah, so True Believers, go to oktruebelievers.com. Our last week's episode was with Stuart Mulrain, the organiser as well, so check that out and find out more about it. And it's been a long, emotional show. We've had we've had downs.
Yeah.
And how do you feel about it, folks? Do you agree with our choices? Probably not, but we don't care. We talked about them anyway. But if you wanted to rant about something, there's several different ways you can let us know. AwesomeComicsPod@gmail.com is the email. Likewise, Tony.AwesomeComicsPod@gmail.com if you've got any events or any new comic book launches coming up. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/AwesomeComicsPodcast. And also join our group discussion, Awesome Comics Talk. As always, there's loads of stuff going on there.
There's loads today, actually. I see one post has got like 50 comments on it or something. Yeah,
yeah.
Great.
John Lay of Brethren Born put a nice post about what to do with your backlog of small press and independent books.
Yeah.
So go on the page and check out that. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If it was on iTunes, leave us a review. Come on, this is a good one. We got feisty. Stacey said the C word within the first 3 minutes.
At least twice, yeah.
but I did get through the whole thing without saying vagina, so...
Nice.
That's a bonus, isn't it?
Well, you've done it now, haven't you? Is that worse?
I mean, you could bleep out... No, it's not worse. It's just that it's become a thing now that apparently whenever I guest on people's podcasts, I almost immediately say the word vagina.
Stacey Taylor, making things
vaginal.
Appreciate
you took up a notch for us.
We're well posh.
Yeah.
We also got to thank Mr. Webster, didn't we? Because he's done a little image of us all having a fight.
Cheers, Sam.
Sam Webster. Thank you very much for doing that.
I love it when people draw me in things. Draw me in more things.
There you go.
Like one of your French girls? No.
Now we're talking.
My word. Where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Ezohyz on Twitter, and I've had a few things gotten down the tubes, one of which is the book we talked about last week, which is how to organise a Comic-Con from Kev Brett, which is some pages up and a little review on Down the Tubes. Have a look at that.
Nice. Daniel?
Yeah, Kev sent through a comic, The Koala Conspiracy, which is fucking ace.
Oh yeah, he's good. He does great stuff, doesn't he? Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Nice, which is coming back strong. Can't wait. You can find me on Twitter @JesterDiablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmassfrommars.com. And Stacey, where can people find you and your lovely podcast, etc.?
Oh, well, you can find me mostly on Twitter talking nonsense at Stacey's Parlour. That's Stacey with an E and Parlour with a U for any American listeners. And you can find the show at popcultureparlour.podbean.com. I also want to do a little shout out to Sarah Grayley for putting her hairy legs into a comic, because it made me feel better about my hairy legs. Thanks for that.
We need more hairy legs
and mine.
I like to pretend that I don't shave my legs because I'm a feminist and ain't nobody going to tell me what to do, but it's purely out of sheer laziness. So
I don't shave mine.
You tried to shave a knee?
Yeah.
Fucking nightmare.
No one shaves on this show, do we? Well,
no, we don't actually.
Sometimes you shave each other.
I think the aforementioned rash that I've been suffering with does stem from a shaving incident.
Yeah.
Why did you shave your bum?
Also, did you go against the grain? Did you go against the grain?
Always.
Because that's the word.
Yeah.
Always.
Just generally in his attitude towards life. Yeah.
I was like, fuck that noise.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Also, I'm on iTunes and Stitcher.
There you go. Check it out. Brilliant show. Obviously, we didn't have any comic reviews this week, but next week we're going to have a review, a palooza.
A bonanza of reviews next week, isn't it?
A bonanza.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one was just a laugh, and it was amazing. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And have a brilliant week. Read comics. Watch some of these films. or don't. and be sure to type it V-E-N instead of P-E-N when you're looking for Venus Wars.
Yeah.
Stay awesome, folks. See ya.
See ya.
Smooch.
Dan keeps sending me sexual messages.
Pardon?
Tony sent a message to the group saying, all okay. And I replied, I've developed a rash on my backside these past few days. Yeah. And I went, oh, you made the show.
And for some reason, that's sexual. I'm very concerned about what you think is sexy.
No, God, no. I'm not going to tell another human being why an Alabama hot pocket is.
My ex-wife told me not to look at you when we shared a room, Vincent. It makes me feel worse than I should have looked at you.
Yeah. Look at it. Look at it. Why won't you look at me?
I don't want to.
Is that normal? People... Right.